It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. A bad week, but a tough discussion up ahead. We'll talk about Facebook Live, the use of robots to kill perpetrators. And, yeah, there's some light stuff, too, including Pokemon Go and the Apollo 11 source code. It's all coming up next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 570, recorded Sunday, July 10th, 2016. Judge Dredd. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get two free books. Go to audible.com/twit2 and by stamps.com. Here's an easy way for you to save time for your business, avoid trips to the post office, and use stamps.com to get postage right from your desk. To get my special offer, go to stamps.com, click on the microphone, and enter TWIT. And by Carbonite. Keep your business safe this year. Protect files on your computer or server with automatic cloud backup from Carbonite. Try it for free without a credit card at Carbonite.com today. And use the offer code TWIT to get two free bonus months if you decide to buy. And by Harry's. For guys who want a great shave experience for a fraction of what you're paying now, go to harrys.com/twit and get $5 off your first order. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the latest news of tech throughout the week. And we bring together each week a panel of experts. In this case, it's going to be a little bit of a different panel, I think. And I should probably warn you, we may talk about the news events of the week as much as we talk about the tech news of the week. But I think there's a lot of relevant tech in this, certainly media coverage. Joining me to my right now, Jason Heiner. He's the global editor-in-chief at Tech Republic, CBS Interactive. Good to have you.
Thrilled to be here, as ever, in studio.
Oh, you know what? My Follow the Geeks book is in my office. Can you get that? Because I want to show off the book that Jason wrote. And it's really as close as I'm ever going to get to a memoir. So thank you. Well, I'm chapter 9.
I don't know about that, but maybe it's a first taste.
Yeah, really awesome. Anyway, nice to have you. What are you out here? You're normally in Louisville.
Yeah, so I mean, I come to San Francisco pretty regularly, but
now because of CBS.
I mean, CBSI, you know, our headquarters for CBSI are here, but I have a bunch of meetings in town this week with tech companies. Yeah,
I just downloaded the CBS News app, which streams as kind of a strange live version of CBS News.
Yeah,
and it was made in San Francisco on Market Street.
Yes,
made by CBS Interactive.
It was. It's actually quite good.
It's a
good start. And the thing that's nice about it, as opposed to some of the other news outlets, you know, like on Apple TV and some of these other apps, where you have to put your credentials in.
I didn't have to put my cable
for your cable and all that. Anybody can use it online as well as in on the app. You can stream anything, and so that's great. I think they did a terrific job with it. The interface is good. It's on Xbox. It's on.
It is, really?
Yeah, it's on Xbox. It's on Apple TV. It's on Fire TV. It's on Roku.
And the live, what does the live come from? I mean.
Yes, from a variety of.
So
CBS
Face the Nation
news.
Is on right now.
Yeah, so of course, they'll take shows from. They'll take bits of 60 Minutes. They'll take, bits of their various shows as well as the CBS News, reports. And then they build it into a. Into a 24-hour feed, similar to what you do, where you're running some
live.
Reruns.
Yeah, it's not
all live. Some of it's reruns, top stories, and that kind of thing.
It's nice to have, though, and it really enables cord cutters, because one of the things you lose with cord cutting is live news.
Yes.
So the fact that you could run this on your device, even your Xbox.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I think that, like I said, I had nothing to do with it, but I was impressed with what they did. I think they went in the right direction with it, especially not making it tied to a cable account.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, they really went over the top, so to speak. Also joining us, Jeff Jarvis. He's a regular on This Week in Google, of course, professor of journalism at CUNY, the City University of New York, and blogger of Buzz Machines, written many books, including Geek-Sparing News.
GIFs.
GIFs.
No, not GIFs.
Great to have Jeff here. Also joining us, I'm thrilled to have him. Siva Vaidyanathan is a professor of journalism, or media, really, the Robertson Professor of Media Studies at the University of Virginia. And you've been on before, but it's been a long time, so I was thrilled we could get you on.
Five years ago.
Wow.
Now I'm feeling bad. I'm sorry,
and you haven't changed a bit, Siva.
Well, I was bald then. I am bald now. So, yeah.
You know what's gone is Sivocracy. Your blog is gone since we talked last.
Yeah, you know, Twitter just made my blog irrelevant. I used to have two blogs, actually. I had one called Googleization of Everything and one called Sivocracy. And, you know, it got to the point where I wasn't having deeper thoughts than Twitter could handle. So,
140 characters turned about to be the perfect post size.
It satisfied the shallowness I craved in life. And I just felt like, you know, if I had something more to say, I would, you know, send it to Slate or something and try to get a bigger impact sort of, you know, once every 6 months rather than once every day. Like Jeff knows this all too well, like the constant voice in your head saying you should post something or you're going to lose all your followers. You know, that was driving me nuts. It was.
Yeah, I agree. It's gone.
Not letting really, you know, so I found the balance of Twitter and the occasional, you know, published piece somewhere else to be satisfying enough.
Are you using Medium, Siva?
I'm not. I really haven't been tempted to get back into, you know, sort of writing regularly in a self-published format.
But the beauty of Medium is you don't have to do it regularly. You don't have your own brand and space. You fit in a social world, and I think you're perfect for it.
Yeah, I mean, I've been tempted by it, and certainly friends of mine do it quite a lot, and I've, you know, been a frequent reader. But, you know, like every time I have something I feel I need to say, I'm usually able to find a commercial outlet for it, and I won't have to build my own.
Get paid?
Yeah.
Oh, getting paid. He doesn't have to get paid. He's a professor. That's the beauty of that.
I like not only getting paid, I like getting... You know, like if I publish with Slate, I get the instant Slate bump I get.
Right.
If I publish with Chronicle of Higher Education, which is a different audience, I get that too. So I can sort of, you know, and that really is like only once every 6 months I really feel like I need to jump in. There are so many smart people out there who are faster than I am. So, you know, so I've been building my own stuff. I've been, you know, trying to figure out how to, and I'm going to have some sort of blog-like platform for my center. It's called the Center for Media and Citizenship that I'm building, and it's the thing that's publishing the Virginia Quarterly Review, an award-winning long-form magazine, and it has. I have a local television show in Charlottesville called the Coy Barefoot Show, and we're about to start a podcast and radio show called Citizens Band. So I'm doing all of these other things, and on top of that, you know, my own, you know, sort of tweeting and Facebooking, which is, you know, heavy enough. But what I really want to do then is start a self-publishing platform, probably just WordPress, through my center site, that will focus on talking about the things we're doing at the center. But it'll be sort of a different speed than what I was doing before.
Every medium has its different strengths, right? And there's something about TV or video and something about audio that's very different from the written word, the long form. But I think thoughtful is better than fast. So I'm,
that's sort of where I came down. Like in the early days of this century, back when we all started blogging, you know, there weren't that many voices. And at that time I felt kind of cutting edge. I felt like there was a vacuum to fill and I could do something good by helping to fill it. And once Jeff was proof of concept for the rest of us of how to, you know, actually develop a following that would be engaged and informative and intelligent. You know, it was too tempting not to do that. And I wrote that, you know, for from 2004 to, or maybe 2003 when I started my blog, till about 2012. And at that point, I felt like I had done my job and there were lots of other sort of faster, smarter, younger people out there doing it better. And I didn't need to anymore. It's like the world was bigger in that sense. So I didn't feel the pressure.
Well, we're glad we could get you here to share your insights here. But cool. I appreciate it. Also with us, Owen J.J. Stone. We call him O Doctor for reasons unknown.
Huh? I'm not playing Drake's Fortune. I was listening.
Yes, you were. Said. You were playing Uncharted. Stop it. Knock it off.
I forgot to hit pause. I mean, we are here. The Facebook did the thing, and Google said what?
And now?
Yeah.
This is what happens.
The whole thing.
IQMZ.com. So I've convened what I kind of think of as a blue ribbon panel, because this was such a difficult week.
Yeah.
I thought it would really be great if we could use Twit, get together this blue ribbon panel to answer the question, what the f*** off?
That is the question.
Yeah. And I'm sure we'll bleep that out, but you get what I'm saying there.
Yeah.
Yep. You know, I'm going to start with you, Owen, because I noticed one of the things I noticed is, you know, I follow you, of course, on social media and Instagram, and I noticed a number of your friends saying, are you okay? Being a black man in America now apparently is cause for your friends to say, is everything all right, Owen?
It was literally insane. I halfway through the day, I realized, like, man, I got like 6 text messages. I'm getting DMs. I'm getting Facebook messages. I got 2 phone calls. And I'm like, wait, did something happen to me? I know I'm from the future, but I should know if something happened to me. Like, what's going on? And people are just like, well, you get pulled over so much, you're just on my mind. Like, I'm thinking of a black person that I know that gets pulled over a lot, and it's you. And I'm like, oh, well, thanks for caring.
Does it give you chills when, I mean, I think we all saw, for instance, the Facebook Live posting. Does that give you, I mean, it must be, do you have a personal, a visceral reaction to stuff like that?
Certain things bother me. Like, you know, I'm an emotional robot, so I don't really care about stuff. But when the Alton Sterling thing, when they showed like all his kids and his son crying,
son was crying, I couldn't. That was
I cried. And when the Minnesota shooting, when this woman is obviously in shock because the officers has cowering, shaking in his voice, and she's talking calm and plain as day at the time.
Yeah.
And then when she realizes everything that happened and she's in the car and she's screaming and crying, her daughter's like, it's okay, mommy, I'm here with
4-year
you.
Four-year-old daughter.
I started bawling because I'm like, wow. Like, they're, like, and kids really get to me because I don't worry about myself.
It's what really changes everything.
It does.
Suddenly it becomes very personal because you got kids. Yeah.
Her coolness struck me, too, that it was a skill of needing to be compliant under authority. Yes, sir.
She didn't want to get shot as well.
Exactly. Yeah. And it was almost a reflexive skill that just struck me so much that came out of her, and the need to stay calm herself as he was off the rails. Yeah. The cop was. But she was the calm one because she has to be to save her life. It was the most chilling part to me.
And then, of course, you know the tragedy in Dallas, which is so intertwined with this, with 5 police officers shot and 7 more injured. It's one of those weeks where you just don't know, I think, what to think. And we're a tech network and we cover the technology. So I think the thing to cover on this for us, and one of the reasons Siva and Jeff are here, as well as you, Jason, is it's about media and how media has changed, because there was in both of the first 2 shootings, particularly in the Minnesota shooting, it was video that changed the conversation. Somebody tweeted, black men getting shot by police is nothing new. It's the video that's new.
Yeah. Well, can I just say one thing before I, because I'm going to try not to rage out in my heart. So I posted the video of the Minnesota shooting when it was a Facebook Live, and within like half an hour, that whole post was deleted.
Yep.
Now, Facebook comes out the next day and says it was a glitch. I'm just going to say, and nobody has to back me up on this because you guys have more important jobs than myself, but how in the world, out of the millions of accounts, does this account glitch, delete her whole account, delete the video of the account, and within, besides the fact that it never shows up on Facebook trending topic, but we already know they have a panel, so did somebody see it, say, oh my goodness, and just delete it? Because that's evidence, that's proof, that's probably, that could save somebody's life.
Well, you know,
and the fact that happened is insane to me, because I could watch Finding Dora, the full movie right now. Facebook can't take down other people's copyright stuff when they send in 40,000 complaints. and they can't take it down. But you took down this thing, and it was a glitch at all the sites and all the world on all the time. Facebook, really? And then you're going to put up a sign that says Black Lives Matter? Oh, you better put that sign up. You better leave that sign up for a long time, Mr. Zuckerberg, because somebody needs to explain to me how that account glitched and got deleted.
So just for people who don't know, I don't know how you would not know, a gentleman named Philando Castile was shot by a police officer during a traffic stop. His girlfriend, Diamond Reynolds, was sitting next to him when it happened and started streaming, which is really interesting, live on Facebook right after the officer fired. She very weirdly calmly, although some say she's probably in shock, perhaps protecting her four-year-old who was in the back seat, perhaps protecting herself in the face of a kind of irrational use of force, but for whatever reason narrated. She said, we'd been stopped for a broken taillight. Castile was licensed to carry a handgun. He told the officer that, reached for his wallet as the officer had requested and was shot. The officer presumably thinking he was reaching for the handgun. Facebook, by the way, as you said, Owen, pulled down, or something happened. The video was pulled down. Facebook restored it. They said it was a technical glitch, but
her entire account was gone.
Diamond Reynolds, the woman who shot the video, later said the police demanded the phone. She thinks they deleted her Facebook account in an attempt to shut down the video.
Yeah.
Well, then Facebook shouldn't have released something talking about it.
So, I don't know. Facebook would presumably have known that. I don't know. I don't know. So we don't. So I think we don't know what happened.
Well, here's what's amazing to me. You have a company as sophisticated and as experienced as Facebook launching a product that they had to have anticipated would be both used for really powerful, important events like this, and misused by people. And they probably have policies and procedures for the misuse. I would imagine, that they've got themselves covered on things like obscenity and pornography and even things like military exercises, which you would imagine someone in Pakistan using Facebook Live would want to capture a drone strike at some point. And I'm sure that Facebook has worked through the protocols for what to do in that sort of event, where Facebook does not want to be implicated in an international incident, for instance, right? What they've decided, we'll probably never know. But, look, their grown-ups working there. Their lawyers working there. They probably figured that out. How could they have not anticipated, given all that's happened in the United States in the last 24 months, that there would be a moment when we have an officer kill a civilian in what looks like a thoroughly unjustified set of circumstances, where it would not come through Facebook Live at some point.
I think you're right, Steve.
But this is the sort of thing that you would think a grown-up company would have thought through, had policies in line for. Now, not every scenario is going to fit, and perhaps this one was more gruesome than they had even imagined, and more brutal than they had even imagined. And of course, they do not want to be in the business of putting out gratuitous examples of violence. But this was so, I hate to use the word newsworthy, it's a crappy word, but so important to so many people that whatever people would think about its gratuitousness, that's trivial in perspective. But I think we're going to have to figure out, not only as the companies like Facebook are going to have to figure out better protocols for this, but we are going to have to figure out as the producers of these moments, because now we all have these devices, we are going to have to figure out and come to some sort of agreement as a society about how much we're going to allow companies that have to protect themselves and protect their own reputation and protect their own legal standing, how much we're going to let them be our publishers of these moments, and what are the risks and benefits, because it's basically Facebook should be in the business of protecting itself, right? But whatever they thought through, they're not going to be too open about.
They did release a statement the next day, clarifying it, but you're right. I doubt they had thought about that.
Can I
interject?
Yeah, go ahead, Jeff.
I think a few things. One is, I think, Siva, you're right in what you say, but I suspect that And I have no basis to know anything here, but I'm just going to guess that there's an algorithm somewhere that says, uh-oh, huge amounts of traffic to something, says it could be porn. Let's play safe. That's one. So it's not thought through. Number two is if a human at a low level looks at it and says, uh-oh, blood, gore, there's a rule somewhere that says don't do this, they could have made an unsophisticated decision if a human decision was made. But then number three, I've argued for some time that Facebook needs a high-level editor on staff, not to edit, not to create content, but to bring decisions that represent the public's interest rather than just the brand's interest to Facebook. Because I think these decisions are being made now in great measure from a PR perspective of, is this good or bad for Facebook? And Facebook didn't really intend, I fully believe, to become a major distributor of news. But now that it is, it has to grapple with the responsibility that comes around that and has to make decisions based on principles. So a week ago, they released their principles for the news feed and said friends and family come first. No news there, always been the case. Next comes entertainment and information. And that's fine. That's what Facebook's about. As you have said about Google, Siva, it's a company. It's going to operate like a company. It knows what its company's priorities are. But now that it is, like it or not, in this position where it is going to be the distributor of what witnesses witness, then it has to be able to make, you're right, mature, responsible, ethical decisions based on that and based on the importance, and not take something down to protect us from ourselves, right. Not take something down because it's unpleasant, but also to take things down like, you know, beheadings from ISIS. I don't object to that myself.
Right. Of course. Yeah.
And it is their right to do this, so I think. So I think in this case, it's probably an immature company. You say it's a big company. It's an immature company in terms of being able to deal with these things. And I think they're going to have to learn fast. And I think they need good advice about what to do.
Right. And so one of the fascinating things about this moment is it was not just a video posted. It was Facebook Live. It was a Facebook product. It was intended to capture a live event. And if it were just about a video posted, you capture it to your phone, you upload it to your account, then Facebook has the opportunity to delay and defer the decision on its distribution.
Right.
It can gather the three people to think about it after the algorithm has flagged it. The problem we have here now is that this was an event broadcast live, I assume, to whoever among this woman's friends were watching on Facebook at that moment. So not a lot of live viewers, but it lived on beyond that after that moment. So Facebook probably needs a completely different set of protocols for the live moment. Next time that we have a situation much more like what happened in Baton Rouge, I'm sure it's happening in the next 5 to 6 days, we are going to see most likely a Facebook Live situation rather than just a captured video one, because someone's now going to think, I can actually make some more waves by using Facebook Live. And so Facebook's going to face this once again. And so then it's going to be faced with that big question, right? Shutting down the account. Gosh, who the heck? That was, no one would agree that was a good idea.
Yeah.
But perhaps saying, you know, this video is under review for an hour or two isn't a bad idea, as long as at no point are they really messing with the important public discussion that comes from that. But then we are going to see, right, you know, what counts as important public discussion and what does not, or elements of, you know, certainly anything that ISIS is promoting or anything that any other terrorist group is promoting is something that, you know, Facebook has no interest in, and we should not have an interest in, frankly, in viewing it.
I get all that about Facebook, and they don't want to put ads up against someone being shot. But I mean, I just saw Austin Sterling shot fully. It wasn't like it was the aftermath of the guy sitting there. We saw him get pop, 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 and the camera just turns away. Yeah. And that was on every single page, everywhere, all over Facebook. And there wasn't a, this might disturb you, put up on those videos, because once you can't stop it. But I mean, like, if that was the case, I get it. But again, you are a multinational company. You are the biggest thing in the world. Everybody's addicted to you. Do not tell me it's a glitch. Give me an adult reasonable response. You have PR teams out the wazoo. You got lawyers out the wazoo. These stupid, petty answers that they give is insane and disrespectful.
Yeah.
Oh, we don't have a team that handles the trending topics. Oh, wait, we do have people that actually – I mean, just stop.
And those are the wrong people to make the decisions. Oh, and you're exactly right. The wrong people to make decisions are PR people and lawyers, because they represent the brand, where what they need is a public editor.
Yeah,
they need someone to represent the public's interest when you become so embroiled in what is, as Siva says, important in the public. Now, there was another case today where Dallas, there was a reported case in a parking garage next to police headquarters in Dallas, and the police asked TV not to broadcast. Well, are they going to go to Facebook and say, please cut off all live feeds from this area? And is Facebook going to say yes or no? They're going to have to come to policy decisions on how to react to this.
Do we just have to accept the fact that everything from now on and that is done in public will potentially be streamed?
Yes.
I think it's like, presume no privacy in public is certainly a good
thing. Oh, you never could.
In the long run, is that a good thing? I'm sure it makes the job more difficult for law enforcement in some situations.
It depends on what you mean by good thing. I mean, like, there will be good consequences. I think the fact that these two events hit us so hard is a direct result of the fact that people were ready, willing, and able to capture these scenes of brutality and distribute them so widely. And as far as I can see, we are going to be better off in the long run because of the suffering that these two human beings went through. Now, does that mean every incident and every result of live broadcasting by citizens in the public is going to be good? No, certainly there will be something where there's a serious misuse. But, look, this is how we've decided to live, and we have to figure out not just what the big institutions are going to do with this material, which is how we open this conversation, big institutions like Facebook, what is their level of responsibility here? But we are actually going to have to figure it out for ourselves. We're going to have to come as adults ourselves, as citizens ourselves, and say, all right, under the following conditions, what I'm going to send out here or capture here is exploitative or not, is gratuitous or not, is going to help or not. Some of the questions are going to be easy. You see cops beating up an unarmed person, that's an easy call. But some of them are not going to be so easy. We're going to have another 20 to 25 years of these discussions as we see edge cases come up through here. It's important to remember also that we are we went through 75 years of living in a videographical news world, first photographs and then television video, that have been highly selected, highly edited. CBS News in 1972 had very strict standards on how much blood they would show from the Vietnam War. And so we have been living in a world for a long time in which we had been shielded from the full brutality of.
And many have made the argument, had we seen the brutality of the Vietnam War or modern warfare, that we would be much less likely as a nation to pursue that as a viable solution.
So that's over. And the real challenge here is, how do we live in such a world without becoming jaded and desensitized?
But I do say that is the advantage of live video. It is not. It is unedited. It is unexpurgated. It is not bowdlerized. It is what happens as it's happening. And although cameras can lie,
it
even
is
live
from a certain
video,
point of view, or where you it's like any good story. You know, where you start it and where you stop is one of the most important parts of telling
a
story.
But I still think that's better than having
the edited version.
CBS decide that, well, we don't want to show too much blood in the Vietnam conflict. Not because probably they had a political agenda. In fact, Walter Cronkite eventually came out against the war. More so because they didn't want to offend their viewers. And I remember watching CNN. Anderson Cooper warned everybody, we're going to show you very graphic video. I think it was the Baton Rouge shooting.
They pause it now, and they just.
He said, and we're going to show it to you, all of it, and then it was edited, and he was kind of surprised. He said, "I'm sorry, I didn't realize it was edited." So there's the same sensibilities, obviously,
right? And that's okay,
and it's appropriate, I guess.
CNN. You know,
but that's where Facebook has an opportunity, you know, because it is the unexpurgated, unedited version of the story.
When you edit the video, you take away the pain of the video.
Exactly.
When I watch it on TV, I think, oh, well, what's the big deal?
Right.
When you see it on the New York Post paper where he's laid out like a cross on the ground,
you say,
oh, my goodness. I think there's blood everywhere.
This might have been quite an education for a lot of people who play Call of Duty all the time and really didn't understand what a shooting looked like for real.
Exactly.
Right. So, the ACLU, some months ago, distributed an application or attempted to called Mobile Justice, the idea being record police misconduct and it will be sent immediately to the ACLU. Didn't get much pickup. But when Facebook does it, I thought it was fascinating, among many things, and probably not the most important thing.
But she had the presence of mind to start Facebook live.
Yeah.
Instance.
It was fascinating.
But this goes back to Siva's point about being live, is that, they take my phone away from me. They try to erase the file. Sorry, the file is in the cloud.
Too late.
It's gone.
Yeah.
It's been seen. It's too late. And so putting a delay on that has a very huge implications. That if other people cannot witness what's happening, and if it can be, it becomes a form of prior restraint. Right. If we expect the platforms to hold back, live is why she went to Facebook Live. It's why the value was there, because witnesses were with her and she wanted them there. And even if it was two people before it became 2,000, before it became 2 million, it mattered because she was not alone in witnessing what was happening and in having an impact on that. So
she probably knew she could lose her phone. You know, she could have lost her phone to the police within 10 seconds of just reporting
That's the thing people always say about recording the cops, too, because you got to understand, again, her comm was something different. But people tell me all the time, oh, and you get stopped so much, why don't you record the cops? Now, I don't know how many times you guys have been pulled over, but even when you watch any of these recordings, the cops get super extra 22% aggressive when they see a phone out. Oh, you want to record me? Oh, okay. Well, and then it turns up. So, you know, Facebook Live, like you said, they could take your phone away. They could smack your phone. They could smash your phone. So at least for a second, for a minute, or however long you can run it, it's going out for somebody else to help you. Because that's why I've never recorded. The last stop I got stopped, I did put the audio record on, and I set my phone down in the dash because he literally pulled me over for no reason, and I was freaking out. So I did audio record that, but I can't hold my phone up and record you and say I'm recording you because then they catch attitude and it goes through the roof. But live, I have somebody, like you said, two people, one person, somebody's out there to be like, hey, what happened? Oh, an hour ago.
Or I noticed the ACLU app is not available in all states, only 18 jurisdictions. What is the law about recording?
Siva?
Oh, well, across the United States, it's completely allowed. Cops will intimidate you, but it is completely allowed. It is your First Amendment right to record cops doing their business at any point. Of course you can't do it in a police station. But if you're outside.
Absolutely.
Now
there is no presumption of privacy in public for a public official doing that work, nor should there be.
Privacy don't even work into it. It's your First Amendment right to capture and broadcast.
There was an Illinois law that said that police had a right of privacy for what they did as their public duty in public. And that was finally, I believe, struck down. But that was an Illinois law. It was based on the police's right of privacy.
Well, it's obviously ridiculous.
Amen.
Right. So the thing is, though, that doesn't mean it's cost free, right? So as our good Dr. Owen has said, right, you are putting yourself at risk for more aggressive behavior. You are putting your phone at risk physically and otherwise. You are likely to be drawn into a very difficult day or weekend if you choose to do this. So, and everyone understands that. Everyone who's likely to face this sort of situation understands those costs. Now, we have different costs. If I'm standing on the side of the road and I see something that I think should be captured, I'm going to get less flack than some of the other people who might do that, largely because I'm less of a target than some other people for all the obvious reasons. And that's part of our problem, that we don't all have equal status as citizens exercising our rights, whether they're First Amendment or obviously Second Amendment rights in this country. Now, but nonetheless, the cops will lie to you and tell you that you shouldn't be doing this. and they, you know, doesn't matter what the law is, they will say you shouldn't be doing this, but absolutely you could and should be doing it. And the ACLU has a simple site that guides you through this, tells you what to say to an officer in this situation, how to calmly explain what you're doing and that you mean no harm. And all of that's good advice. And any, there are a number of other sites that, that talk you through this. But absolutely. Now, it does mean, though, as citizens, we should probably use our discretion, you know, because sometimes we might interpret what is not a particular and a particularly antagonistic situation. We might help to escalate it, especially if you're dealing with someone with mental illness, for instance. So sometimes you do have to read the situation with some experience and sophistication, but, you know, that's not always possible.
So I think in the case of Facebook, one of the things we have to, what this ultimately boils down to is that they have to embrace, realize and embrace the fact that it is an editorial platform and that every editorial platform has its sort of editorial policy, its, you know, point of view, its mission. And so, you know, in the case of, you know, Twit has its mission. Tech Republic has its mission. Every platform has its mission.
We didn't start as social media transformed into media, right? We didn't start as a social network becoming a social media platform. And they clearly are having some struggles.
They definitely, you know, and maybe we're seeing the seed of that in Zuckerberg's response, where he said, "Well, I hope we never have to see another video like Diamonds. It reminds us why coming together to build a more open and connected, remember those two, world is so important and how far we still have to go." So that's a little bit of an acknowledgement that they've got a lot of work to do, which they do. But the open and connected part, I think, is what, you know, those are the words that they use again and again in their and have used in their mission statement, which is interesting because there's things of what they do which are very much not open or connected. You look at the policies, internet policy in India. You look at some of the things, the fact that it is a closed platform and why it's such a valuable platform. Nevertheless, the values that they say they want to portray is to build this sort of open, connected world.
Remember, it is a publicly held company. Mark may have all the best intentions in the world, but he also has a fiduciary responsibility to the shareholders not to, you know, hurt the value of the company.
Right.
This is the same conversation that went through the minds of CBS's management during the Vietnam War, that went through the minds of CNN when Anderson Cooper tried to play the full video and couldn't. And Facebook's going to have to do this too.
They also face liability if they let us make all the decisions about what gets up on there, right? So they face liability if what we record and post violates someone's privacy. They face liability if what we record and post is potentially obscene, according to any local law.
So they do
China.
Have these really things. Yeah. And you make a good point. It's not just in the U.S.
Yeah, we could libel someone. I could libel someone on a video and post it on Facebook, and Facebook might be at least brought into the suit by choosing to run it because they are the publisher.
So there's no way for them to use some sort of safe harbor.
So there is.
Well, there is Section 235.
Yeah, there is for both obscenity and for copyright safe harbor. But it's and that helps in the United States, but Facebook is a global company, and anything I post is visible in Canada and Turkey and India. And you know, I have followers in all those places. So there are so many different venues in which Facebook could get in trouble, which is why they do have this team of lawyers and they do run these questions through and they come up with a baseline that protects them through most of the world, through most of time, or they figure out how to segregate the world with their publication policies.
And going beyond, it's not parochial, but the national concerns that we're going through here in the U.S., you have to think that every country has some fear of Facebook Live video.
Yes.
Because if you're a totalitarian society trying to keep a lid on what's going on, this is suddenly a tool that is very threatening.
Open and connected is the enemy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Periscope, obviously. And then as we saw at VidCon, YouTube announced they're going to put a live button on every single player. There's no getting away from it. And you know, I've argued that totalitarian regimes cannot long live when the people can speak. Now, we'll see whether that's true or not.
We thought that was true with the internet, and that didn't happen, but maybe.
Well, no, it didn't happen yet, but it took 150 years to invent the newspaper. It's going to take a long time to tear down these institutions that depend upon these old presumptions. Yeah. But they're definitely challenged.
Well, and it's more than Facebook. I mean, certainly China blocks Facebook. North Korea blocks Facebook. And Turkey wants to block Facebook. But
when they block Facebook, that solves all of Facebook's problems in a sense, right? It's where they have to worry is Pakistan, India, places that have very strict censorship policies and liability policies, Italy, where privacy policies are strong enough to get Google executives arrested. I mean, those are places that's where they lose sleep.
Italy, where there's just a court case this last week that says that news organizations should erase content more than 2 years old. Now, the right to be forgotten has gone to absurd lengths. This idea that you can control knowledge and control information and control what happened in the world is a legacy of an institutional world that is not going to exist. And it may take a century to get there, but there's no possibility logically in the future that you can control information that well.
But in the meantime, that's why this is why Facebook cannot be counted on right now, and Google cannot be counted on right now to be the, you know, completely open platform that people may have dreamed about and that Zuckerberg boasted about in his letter to investors. It's just there are just too many different areas of regulation and too many different value systems that they're working in, and the U.S. model is not universal. Because of that, they have to be very careful. I mean, it is so easy, for instance, to violate India's laws against insulting anyone's religion. It's very easy. And lots of people are in prison right now in India for saying something that we would consider fairly innocent about someone else's religion. So it's a really dangerous thing, and Facebook could find itself in some big trouble just by going along with that level of publication.
You know what this reminds me of is the encryption. The encryption debate is a very similar debate, but these technologies have a tendency, once they exist, to permeate.
They run ahead of the societal readiness, for them. But this is also part of, we can't get away from the fact this is part of this larger trend that I know has been a recurring theme on Twit throughout 2016, which is this movement of media from these sort of individual platforms, their own individual platforms, to these larger platforms, be it Google, be it Twitter, be it Facebook, be it Medium, wherever it is, that, these are the places where the users are. And so more and more media are being, sucked into putting their content there. So it's related to not just Periscope, but it's also related to, AMP, Google AMP. It's related to Facebook articles, instant articles. It's related to all these things that these platforms themselves are becoming the newspaper. They are becoming the television channel. And so what does that mean? That means a lot, right? It means that more people can become part of the conversation, but it also means that, these safeguards that have been in place, these sort of guidelines that have been won and earned over a long time, right, are in some cases thrown out the door. In some cases have to be rethought and deserve to be rethought. But at the same time, there are a number of things that we're throwing out that, that are a problem, right? Editorial policies,
So you've made this argument, Jeff, which is that it's not really any different from the days of highly concentrated media power. We didn't question the bias of the New York Times or Edward R. Murrow's Tiffany Network often.
I was going to say, who didn't?
I grew up in the 60s. I don't think
I'm not that old.
When Walter Cronkite said that the Vietnam War is unwinnable, that carried a huge amount of weight in this country, and it's probably why LBJ did not run for president again.
Oh, and you go first. You go first.
My go first is, I heard all that international talk. I'm talking about Facebook here.
Well, I'm just making the point worried about Facebook's editorial bias in all of this, but isn't it better than it was, even if we didn't acknowledge it in the 60s, there was always, there's always been this editorial, and this is Jeff's, always been Jeff's point. There's always been this editorial bias. Yes. Now it's just out there in the open and clear.
Well, there's also more opportunity for more people to speak.
And
yep. Yes, the argument is made that Facebook and company have a level of control that they become the new gatekeepers. Except my problem with that is that I think social media is a misnomer. We in media see the world godlike and think that it, because it looks like us, it's media. Facebook's not a mediator so much as it is an enabler. However, it does in these stories here have a role in mediation, and that's an issue. And I think back to what Stephen was saying, I think what's important is for us in journalism and media and the academe, rather than seeing Facebook as the enemy in this case, we should be giving them cover and giving them principles and pushing them to operate under principles so that when they do get pressure from governments anywhere, we stand with them behind free speech. But that's not the way it's working out right now, is that we're saying, oh, they're taking over our job. They're just technologists. They're awful people. They're greedy bastards. They're hurting our business. They're the enemy, and we're fighting them. Well, the point is we can no longer have the hubris to think that everyone is going to come to us as destinations.
Yeah.
We have to go to where the people are, whether that is Facebook or Snapchat or wherever it is. We have to serve the public where and how the public wants to be served. And then when we do use those platforms and they are not aware of these principles and they are immature in this thinking, then what we should be doing is helping them. They should educate us about business and technology. We should educate them about the principles of public information.
And the good news is there is a much broader diversity of voices, not just individuals, but corporate voices. So there are many other choices. If it's not Facebook Live, it's YouTube Live. If it's not YouTube Live, it's Periscope and Twitter. There are more outlets. Maybe there aren't. I don't know. Maybe it's just
and the thing about Facebook.
There's a lot
Facebook
more.
It
seems like
there's a lot more.
Facebook plays a very fun game of we're media. Wait, we're not media.
Right.
We're media. We're not
media. They don't know.
And
they
Google
can't
too.
Figure it out. They're confused, and, Owen. They don't know what the hell's.
I know they're playing a good game because it's a good sales pitch. Speaking of sales pitches, don't we have somebody we owe money?
All right. Thank you, Owen, J.J. Stone. You, my friend. Oh, doctor, you win the prize of the hour because here we are 45 minutes into the show and I haven't done a single ad, but I'm going to do one. There's many more. There are many more things to talk about here on this subject and Pokemon Go. So we're going to do all of that.
Important things.
Actually, I don't know if I want to get into this quagmire. The use of a robot by the Dallas police.
Yeah, we're going to have to talk about that.
Advertising.
Okay.
Do your job.
Okay. That's a contrary tease. That's going to make people tune out, so I won't mention that. Our show today brought to you by Audible. You know, sometimes you do want to just not listen to the news. You just want to zone out and listen to some great story or great fiction or nonfiction. And I love Audible for that, with 250,000 books to choose from and all of the current bestsellers. There is so much great stuff on Audible. And I'm going to get you two books. How about that? If you go to audible.com/twit2. So I just finished a book on my way in. I've been walking a lot more, not just for Pokemon Go, although that certainly makes it fun. But I've been walking to work because, you know what? I used to have a 2-hour commute every day, maybe sometimes 4 hours, depending on traffic. And I kind of missed that 2 hours of reading time every day. So it takes me 45 minutes to walk in. I get an hour and a half of reading time listening to my audiobook. I just finished Patton Oswalt's amazing book, Silver Screen Fiend. Patton, of course, the character actor who first made his name in King of Queens, but he was the voice of the chef in Ratatouille, or the rat. He was the star of Ratatouille. He's a great character actor. You'd recognize him immediately. And his book is wonderful. If you love movies, if you love comedy, if you like to hear. I like listening to biographies, and especially autobiographies. Keith Richards' autobiography, for instance. I love hearing the inside story of this stuff. Audible has some great reading. Now I've switched to fiction. I'm reading a kind of science fiction fantasy book called The Doomsday Book by Connie Willis. I love Connie Willis's stuff. This book is about a mid-century, 21st century, so future, researcher who travels back to the Middle Ages for research purposes. And I've just started it. I love the premise.
Yeah.
I love it. And she's wonderful. She's one of my favorite science fiction, or it's kind of more fantasy stuff. You'll find a lot of Connie Willis on audible.com. You'll find a lot of great stuff on audible.com in general.
I have an Audible recommendation.
Yes.
War of Two. It's a book about the Hamilton Burr duel. For those that
I gotta watch that. Listen
yeah.
to that.
Yeah, for those who have caught Hamilton fever in 2016.
Who hasn't? Yes.
Amazing. One of the I It's one of the most amazing pieces of art I've ever seen. But
did you see Hamilton?
I did.
Nice job.
Oh, it's incredible.
And of course, yesterday was his last
show.
And Aaron Burr as well.
Yeah. And Leslie Odom Jr.
And Elizabeth Sue retired also. Yes, last night.
Yes.
Anyway, I can't wait to read this. I read the book, Ron Chernow's book about Alexander Hamilton that inspired the play before we saw the play, because I wanted to kind of know the source material. But this, but I wanted to know more about the duel.
Yeah, this is an incredible book that gives a great perspective on both of them, as well as the real play-by-play on how the duel happened and why.
We need Facebook Live video, because there was a lot of debate. Did he fire into the sky?
Yeah.
What really happened? Aaron Burr was tried for murder?
Yes.
Fascinating.
There are irreconcilable accounts of what happened.
See, if they'd had Facebook Live video,
it would have changed everything, right? One of their seconds would have Facebook Lived that. There's no doubt.
Nowadays, that may be the end of dueling, right? Because if you have Facebook,
it was illegal.
it was already illegal
at the time.
But everything's legal in Weehawken.
Right.
Yeah,
everything's legal in New Jersey. Yeah. Right.
War of Two. Oh, there's a good one. Now the problem is you get two books. It's not a problem. It's just that it's hard because there's so many great books at audible.com. But here's the deal. You're going to go to audible.com/twit2. You're going to sign up for the Platinum account. That's two free books. Really, what you're getting is two books a month, but your first month's free. You also get the Daily Digest of the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal. Cancel any time in the first 30 days. You'll pay nothing, but you will get to keep the books.
I have one other plug. Follow the Geeks, my book, is also on Audible.
Oh, and do you read it?
I actually did read it. It's
How was
narrated
that? Was that
by
fun?
Yours truly. It was actually really fun.
Yeah.
I enjoyed
now,
it.
Now, originally you had Dan Patterson, didn't you, do a kind of freebie version of
we
this?
We did. And we got so much feedback from users that they wanted the authors to read it. And
so I didn't know. So Lindsay does it with you?
Lindsay and I were both going to read it, but it's kind of hard to have two people narrate a book that doesn't work so well. So,
well, now you can listen to Chapter 9.
Yes.
Over and over again.
If you listen to the sample is actually Chapter 9.
Is it really?
With Leah Laporte.
Nice.
Yes, it is.
You interviewed everybody for this book, from Baratunde to
your mom.
To my mom, to Tom Merritt, O'Malik, Veronica Belmont, Gina Trapani. It's really a wonderful book. That's great. I'm glad to hear it. See, that's on Audible. That's wonderful. Follow the Geeks, 10 Digital Innovators in the Future of Work. Look, go to audible.com/twit2. Get your first two books free. I guarantee you it's the beginning of a very nice habit. Audible.com/twit2. And I'm adding this to my wish list because I don't have any credits right now, but that's going right on the wish. It's good.
You'll like it.
Can't wait.
War of Two.
Can't wait. We're talking about the week's news with a great panel. It's a bigger panel than usual. And I apologize for that, because normally each of you gets more time, but the voices I'm hearing and it's just great, and I really appreciate it. Jason Heiner is here from Tech Republic. Owen J.J. Stone, oh, doctor, from, what is it, IQWZ.com?
Yep, IQMZ. MZ. I just did a new Doc Tales with my buddy who's a former police officer. We talked about the whole week's events.
So you must listen.
You get the perspective from... me, someone who gets pulled over all the time, and from somebody else who has spent a few years de-escalating situations.
I want to listen to this.
It's the new Doc Tales. It's up there on any podcast.
Yeah. So very nice.
It's a very, very good conversation. We usually talk about sports. We do a sports show together.
This image, this powerful image of a police officer after the Dallas shooting.
I use both images. The other video image is a police officer hugging a kid, because sometimes people think that I don't like cops. I have a lot of friends that are cops. I have family members cops. 92% or 95% of cops do a great job.
This is the challenge about it. We need police. And there's, you know, in this country, there's one police officer for every 236 citizens. Critical to the success of the police force in this country is respect.
Yeah.
For the police. And that's why, in some ways, this is so disturbing, because a few bad apples undermine all of that.
All anybody wants. If you wanted to stop with the violence in the streets, and, you know, it's the craziest thing in the world. Someone does something that they're not going to get prosecuted for and receive no justice, but people that go out and stand and protest regardless of the shooting in Dallas, are peaceful, and they get arrested and set, and spend the night in jail and then get sent home because they stayed out at 10 o'clock holding a sign. It's the most insane thing in the world. A robber goes into a bank and sticks his hand in a register. He doesn't get the benefit of the doubt to say, well, was he putting money in the register? Or was he taking the money out of the register? I mean, we can't really tell. But when you become a police officer, it's like, well, I know I saw him do that, Owen, but I'm saying you don't really know what happened. I'm like, I saw it. You can't see it. Well, we don't have to. If we slow it down, if we break it down. Oh, and they were a criminal. Well, let me tell you something. If I, something happens to me, there are pictures of me holding AR-15s because I've gone out to the range.
You know. If you got, if anything happened to you, we would hear what a horrible human being you are.
He deserved it. Rabble rousing and yelling at Uncle Leo, and he's out. Yeah. He's insane. Listen to the sound bite of him yelling at people. But I mean, these are the things that people, if there was any kind of justice, it wouldn't be a problem. But the fact that most of those instances that we've seen for the last 2 years on tape, the Freddie Gray incident, the man died, his neck was broken, 6 officers were charged. They drag it out for a year and a half to wait till people get tired and don't hear about it. They pay the family $9.2 million and no one gets arrested. Yeah. So why did you pay the family? So they would shut up and not appeal? And you pay them with taxpayer money? That's the best job in the world. I want to go out, rob a bank, get caught, have the person tell me, you know what, Owen, keep the money. We're going to take the $4 million that you robbed from the bank and get it from the taxpayers, pay it back. Go on about your day. Have a great day. But it sounds insane when you say it for anyone else besides a person that has a badge.
By the way, the guy who shared the Alton story, Sterling shooting on his Twitter account was arrested the next day for assault and battery. He says it was police retaliation. I don't know what the story was. If you're a police officer, and I think I agree with you, Owen, there's so many great police officers doing such a tough, dangerous job, and we need them so badly. I think you would agree it's in the interest of everybody that we weed out the bad apples and that the truth come out. And, it just also breaks my heart. I mean, all of these deaths.
The police shooting in Dallas was horrible.
So tragic.
It's the worst thing in the world. And not to say that the media does the service of the media, but when they put it on there and they have the picture, this man was in the military. But when they show the picture of him in his Africa Bumbada Halloween costume with his fist up, you know what you're doing to the people. Yeah. I mean, you didn't do that when there's a Dallas shooting with the guy with the van.
Yeah.
The white guy had the pipe bombs and a bulletproof van. AR-15 was shooting at cops. Nobody put him in a Zulu Nation shirt and tried to say it was a race war start. He wanted to kill cops too. And it's like, just give us the facts and don't play the game, because the game's already being played amongst people. If the media could just say, hey, maybe this guy had PTSD. Nobody ever says anything like that yet either. Like, the guy was crazy. I don't support that guy. The protest was peaceful.
He was disturbed.
Yeah.
So if I could say a few things about Dallas.
Please, Siva.
So I just read just minutes ago, and I tweeted it, a story from the Dallas Morning News, in which the chief of police and the mayor discussed why they chose to use the lethal robot to defuse the situation and kill the perpetrator. As I look through it, and I've been thinking a lot about the decision to use the robot, what have we opened up? What implications are there? Are we removing the kind of ethical decision-making, putting ourselves at such a distance when we as the state decide to use a weapon like this? And I haven't come to an answer. I don't think anybody could or should come to an answer today. But looking through how the police chief and the mayor went through their thought process, it seems like they satisfied what they needed to satisfy at that moment. They judged that this man was in no position to surrender. He was not interested in surrendering. They deemed him to be unwilling to interact at a level that could have yielded a decent outcome. He was barricaded and armed to the degree that an assault by officers would have put officers almost certainly at lethal risk. And so it seems to me, again, total amateur, that they thought carefully about the implications, and they had standards and protocols for when they would use this weapon, and they went by the book. So I have no argument with their decision in this particular case.
A lot of facts in the Reddit thread, and we'll put a link in our show notes to this.
But what I would raise here is, though, that what worries me is the next opportunity for a less enlightened, less thoughtful police department to make a less informed, more gut-level decision to send a robot in before exhausting all other possibilities. That now, of course, that possibility exists with non-lethal weapons like grenades, stun grenades, tear gas, and so forth. But they are non-lethal. We're talking about a weapon used at a distance that puts no human at risk. It's almost too easy and too tempting a solution to a situation. And so I worry about, again, 5 days, 5 months from now, a police department that is nowhere near as prepared or thoughtful as Dallas is. And by the way, I think we can all agree with the little we know about Dallas over the past week that they have an exemplary police force and an outstanding police chief. But the rest of America is not so lucky.
I think it wouldn't be as much of a concern if we weren't already using Predator drones to all over the world to anonymously, facelessly
and, you know, and again,
kill our enemies.
But in at least one case, assassinating an American citizen without due process, without charges, without a trial, assassinating, which should be and probably
I think
is,
it is illegal, in fact.
Law, right, yeah. But we did it. And no one's facing any repercussions for it. So what I'm afraid is that just like the domestication of body armor, the domestication of battle-ready vehicles, armored vehicles in our streets, the domestication of semi-automatic and automatic weapons, the domestication of the remote control kill device, is that the sort of technology we want to invite into our communities? If we're going to, let's have very open, strict, fervent conversations about the standards of use. So we don't have some unthoughtful, untrained decision maker deciding to use that irresponsibly. Now,
it's
one
a very
last
slippery
thing
slope.
About Dallas, though, before I let the rest of it. I mentioned that article I just tweeted is from the Dallas Morning News. The Dallas Morning News, which is a newspaper I used to work for, did an exemplary job in the 24 hours after that shooting. Everybody who was available in town drove to the newsroom and volunteered their time to make sense of the moment, to take stock of their community. And each one of those reporters and editors and copy editors, every single one of those people felt for their city. They were bleeding inside for their city. They knew their city had been torn apart. And they also knew they had a role to play in the next step in the healing, in the process of making sense, and in diffusing the tension. And I am in awe of the staff of the Dallas Morning News. The production was outstanding. Their speed of production was outstanding. And they got every fact right. And you might remember that almost no other news organization got everything right in the morning after. We had all kinds of stupid posts about how there were multiple shooters and so forth. Yeah. The Dallas Morning News nailed it because they knew their community. They knew their police officers. They knew their community activists. They had witnesses to interview. They got everything right. They got it timely, and they were brave at every step.
We're working on a story on it. We chose not to publish something quickly on the story because it is a story of such import, and there are potentially huge implications for this. And so we're trying to gather information also to see what other police departments are prepared to use force in this way, right? Because I think one of the biggest surprises was that they were prepared to do this, right? Because they clearly had thought about this before and had considered, you know, this scenario playing out. And so if they did, others have too. And so we're looking into, you know, what other police departments are considering this use of force. What are the guidelines they're going to put in place to use them, as well as the ones from that Dallas has used, as well as what does the law actually say in terms of what they can do, and then how did they extrapolate this from the military? Because that's obviously where came from.
The Dallas News, and I'm quoting the article, Siva says, police departments across the country have been training for this particular scenario using a robot remote-controlled robot to detonate explosive for years, but it's believed to be the first time a chief has ever made the call to use explosives to kill a suspect and a standoff. And the reason this is of concern, of course, is the short circuit of due process, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes.
Jeff, are you down with a robo-Judge Dredd?
To me,
now, that's a very sensationalistic way to put that.
Well, no, it is.
It is Judge Dredd. That's what it is.
I guess it is.
Somebody made a decision.
It wasn't autonomous. No, humans made the decision.
Man.
It's just, think of it as a bomb on a stick. I mean, the fact that it's a robot isn't that.
Judge Dredd goes in and does the job. The person sitting there with the controller moves the robot. It's still a person controlling the robot. It's Judge Dredd. Jeff, what do you think?
I think it's the bigger question of the militarization. There's a picture I put up on the feed about an amazing photo, and you see basically a lone woman standing calmly against stormtroopers, and you understand why police right now are wearing body armor after Dallas. Okay, I get that, but what does even that do to their relationship to the community, to their view of threats? To what they do. What does it mean to have all this equipment that may have people behind it, but is clearly overpowering mere citizens? Tiananmen Square and a man versus a tank. And it's not about the technology. It's about the imbalance that's created. And I'm not trying to suggest that the, God knows, I'm not going to make an NRA argument here, that the citizens should be armed.
I was going to say, this just fuels the NRA. This absolutely fuels the NRA, right?
Well, we've got to recognize that the mayor and police chief of Dallas talked about this a bit, is that they have to make decisions about how to go into the community and how to protect themselves at the same time and what they do, and they have to recognize the implications of that. I did hear police on TV today talk about how they need to have discussions about the ethical standards of the use of this technology. Same with drones could have done the same thing on a local level, not just in Afghanistan.
How is it different from... They couldn't do this. They couldn't get a sniper shot. But how would it be different if a sniper took the guy out? It wouldn't, would it?
That's what I was saying. It's still dependent on a person making the move and making the decision. I know a robot went in there.
So the issue isn't the robot or the explosive. The issue is the decision to terminate a suspect without due process. However, it was in this case determined that there was no other safe way to do it. The risk of losing more lives...
He was threatening that there were
significant and imminent. And this is, by the way, in normal police practice, this is exactly what you do if there's a...
And what do you think? I agree with Siva. I think in this case, in the thought process they revealed, the decision is what I can stand for. What do you think?
I find the whole thing kind of funny. Even in his press conference when he was saying, we're negotiating with him, but we're having a hard time because we're trading shots. If you're trading shots with this man, this is not a negotiation.
Well, that was the point, right?
If you listen to some of the things he's saying, he's like, well, you're not negotiating. You're getting shot at. And I have zero problem with the robot. Again, certain things happen where we get distracted by things. Is it right to use a robot? You made the exact point I was going to make. If someone had a sniper shot and they radio up to the sniper and they say, look, he's not cooperating, he's by himself, there isn't another person in the vicinity to harm, take him out. That's what happens. And that has happened I don't know how many times.
All the time. Yeah.
So I'm fine with the robot being used. My first question of comedy is, how did this man let a robot sneak up on him? He took out all these officers, but he lets
Robot they were using to negotiate with him. I may be mistaken on that.
They send in a pizza or a phone with the robot, and then the robot gets him. Right. It reminds me of Grand Theft Auto. They have cell phones in Grand Theft Auto where you can set a bomb in the cell phone, deliver the cell phone to the person you want to kill. They go to the phone like, hello, and then you blow their brains out. So
it's easier to make a robot bulletproof than it is a human.
Right.
So in that sense. But, you know, so I would actually make, and I'm not sure this is an argument I would actually make sincerely, but, you know, I'm a professor and this is the kind of thing we do in the classroom. We set up sort of devil's advocate. So I'm not convinced I'm right about this. But I could construct an argument that using the robot as they use the robot was a more just, more humane, more thoughtful way of dealing with an intransigent threat to officers and other people than the standard SWAT and sniper collective. Because the decision had to be deliberated, it had to be made at the top of the chain, whereas with a sniper, you have discretion by the gentleman or gentlewoman whose finger is on the trigger, in addition to the discretion of several officers on the way to the police chief. So
somebody has to click the button to detonate the robot.
Somebody has to feel that responsibility. But that person could be standing next to the chief. That person could be we're in an early enough situation right now where that decision was clearly made at the top. That decision was clearly made actually in a calmer state with a bulletproof, non-harmable robot. Like, even if the guy blows up the robot somehow, no human dies. They lose a few $100,000. But in that sense, the police can actually be at a lower level of anxiety with no officer's life at stake than had they burst through. This clearly wasn't a sniper situation. They might have just gone with the sniper. But had someone burst through the door.
The thing that's concerning is that we prosecute war in a different way than we proceed in a policing situation. In war, you're fighting a war to kill the enemy no matter what. That's what you're trying to do. In policing, that's not what you're trying to do. And so the use of war technologies in policing raises some specters.
And this is the argument that the NRA makes, you can't use war thought. Yeah.
And even it's tempting. I mean, it's got to be very tempting. A guy takes out five of your comrades and he's got bombs and he's drawing stuff on the wall with blood and he's, you know, going to. It's very tempting, but it's really that's the time when you really have to pause.
This is the argument that NRA makes, though. The NRA makes is that you know, once citizens become overmatched by the authorities, by the government, then they will never have a chance. And as soon as you get a bad apple in there, they can do whatever they want.
That's an anarchist argument, basically.
The NRA gets people to write checks primarily is to believe in that argument.
God bless, open carry didn't do a damn thing in Dallas.
Well, in fact, if anything, it confused the situation because there were people in camo carrying rifles, carrying long guns in the march. And that's why the initial stories that we heard about this situation where there were multiple shooters, they could not distinguish between the actual shooter and citizens who were legally armed.
That's one of the things that irked me too. Go ahead, Jason.
So what this gets to, though, the leap is, and we've touched on it, is the fact that, and we're all okay with the fact to a degree, right, if a human is making the decision, is pushing the button, is all that, where it gets to, and we wrote a long form about this, on Tech Republic, a piece called "Robots of Death, Robots of Love" was about it's called "The Reality of Android Soldiers," and why laws for robots are doomed to failure is this idea that at some point you cross over to the U.S. is already dealing with this with drones to the point that you empower the drone or you empower the robot with a certain amount of intelligence, you tell it what to do, but it goes in and it actually pulls the trigger, right? That's the leap that once you know, we get comfortable enough with this technology that comes next, and that's where the ultimate ethical and, you know, societal dilemma comes in, right? When you actually empower the machine to take a human life on its own. And so that's philosophical, but that's the logical next step that a lot of people are naturally and rightfully afraid of.
Well, right now, we're also, when you talk about the guy that was with the camo shirt and he had the gun, I have so many people say, oh, you know, as a black man, how stupid is he to go out there and do... I was like, well, the thing is, in America, there are rights bestowed upon us until they take them away. And a person in Minnesota who apparently had a permit and was legally having a firearm was shot. He was showing solidarity with his NRA permit carrying brother and carrying a gun that was unloaded out to an event of protest to protest the fact that you can't take our guns away and you can't shoot me for having a gun being a black man. Now, was he bold? Oh, Lord, this man has brass of steel. But at the same time, he was protesting for the right that he's allowed to have. And as much as, you know, they put his picture out there, if they were some kind of great technology where they could actually circulate that image within the police force, an officer would have been on the radio and say, look, I got the guy right here. I already got his gun. What do you want me to do with him? Because he had already turned in his gun before they put his picture on for the world to see and left it up on their Twitter, getting 2,000 retweets an hour until 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I was checking hourly. If they would have some way to communicate, they could have gotten that information. So technology abound. We still have a lot of ways to go. And hopefully when they're in these kind of crises, they can think about that because they already had that man in custody and they're putting his picture out for the world to see and judge. And
Let me wrap this up. We'll move on. But, of course, our deepest sympathy to the fallen, the families of the fallen officers and the two people who were shot. And, of course,
yes,
sometimes I feel like we're in a war zone. But at the same time, I wonder how much of this is because of the 24-hour news cycle and our synaptic level connection to every little thing that happens in the world. It's hard for us to escape the news, and it's important to remember that, you know what, 90% of what's going on, 99% is fine.
Yeah.
And good. And in fact, I'm going to talk about Pokemon Go in a little bit and how that's brought some good into the world. And I think you've even said that, Owen, right? You can focus on the bad things, and they're brought into our living rooms, they're brought into our lives in a way that's unique these days because of how interconnected we are.
The world is the best place that we have because it's the only place we have. There are beautiful things in the world. There are horrible things in the world. There are people starving all over the place. There's people that are overweight like me. It's a yin, it's a yang, and it's a beautiful, ugly place, but it's our place, and you got to enjoy what you can enjoy.
It's very tempting to globalize this and say, it's everywhere.
And it's horrible.
It's happening all the time.
Yeah.
And it's not. And I'm sure you guys, I'm sure Siva and Jeff, you must consider this a little bit too, which is the impact of this constant barrage of bad news on our outlook on life.
Well,
and the expectation of it.
I don't have a problem with the constant barrage of bad news because I think we needed to be shaken out of our
complacency.
A lot of us
needed
to be shaken out of our complacency and our sense that we were living in a kind country, in a kind world. I appreciate, now as taxing as it is, if we're going to be responsible citizens and responsible adults, we're going to have to face the fact that a lot of our neighbors are really horrible people and do horrible things to each other. And if we're going to make these things better, we're going to have to confront them. That does also involve, though, figuring out how to put things in perspective, understanding what risk is versus non-risk, real risk versus fake risk. So, for instance, having your kid kidnapped while walking to school is certainly not going to happen for 99.99999% of families in America under any condition. It's not a real problem in America. But having a friend, an uncle, a clergy member, a scout leader, someone you trust and know hurt your child is a very real possibility. Not a high probability, but a real one we should be concerned about. And yet the media barrage makes us flip our anxieties so that we worry more about the stranger who doesn't exist than the friend or relative who does. And I don't know a way out of that, given the incentive systems for our media right now. But I know that when we come to a situation like we've experienced over the last 3 days, it actually makes me feel optimistic about the fact that we are confronting a level of violence against African Americans that has remained unabated for 400 years, but largely ignored by people outside of the collection of people likely to be victims.
Yeah.
Right. So most Americans have no idea what lynching was about and the pervasiveness of it. Most Americans have no idea about the re-enslavement of African Americans starting in the late 19th century right up through 1940 through things like vagrancy laws. Most Americans have no idea about the violence perpetrated against Latino Americans consistently from about 1900 to about 1970 throughout the Southwest, including being forced labor situations. You know, all of those crimes against our neighbors, against our fellow citizens, have gone unacknowledged. It's not like putting cell phones in everybody's hands is going to suddenly make us acknowledge those things. But now, when we're forced to see the brutality that we're capable of as a society, it opens up that discussion. And we're at least allowed to put these things on the table.
It's shining light in dark corners. You know, that's always been one of the most important jobs of journalism, right? Is shining light in dark corners. And technologies and media like this, it is, and you know, the technologies has enabled citizens to do these things too. And it's always been important because when it happens, communities decide, you know, we can't let these kinds of things happen. This is unacceptable to us. And you saw that in large part in the reaction to these events. And so that will change things. And I think we still have to have the confidence that our communities as a whole are strong enough and good enough, you know, to make change when we shine those lights in dark corners.
Though I think that, Siva, when you mentioned the economic motivations that are here, that remains a problem. What I'm thinking about a lot, and a discussion I want to have with you at length offline, is what we're witnessing in media is the death of the mass media business model, but it's holding on by the fingernails.
Yeah.
And it's seeking traffic for traffic's sake, volume, reach, frequency for their own sake. And the way it does that is by exploiting baser instincts, whether that's crime or sex or hatred or whatever it may be. And it doesn't become an honest view of the world. So I absolutely agree that it's a good thing that we are facing the things we're facing right now. But too much of 24-hour news, too much of what we see in media, too much of what we see in politics is based around a mass model of just trying to put out something that's going to attract people back to us rather than real value, real change, real impact and improvement in society. And at some point, we have to judge media and journalism on whether it improves lives and improves society. And right now, I don't think it's doing a very good job of that.
Uncle Leo.
Yes, doctor.
Tomorrow is Leah's birthday. I would appreciate it if you could get her a card and put a stamp on it and send it to her.
All right, deal. How old is she going to be?
She's turning 9. I was just trying to get us on our next ad spot.
What a cutely. How do you know what our ads are? You're very good. You must be clairvoyant.
Man, I'm taking your spot, Uncle Leo. You done sold away all my inheritance. You think I'm not? Dude, I'm the Owen Laporte. Owen Laporte.
Happy birthday. What are you doing for your daughter's birthday?
Man, we suffer, man. She already done had a sleepover party with 12 minions.
It's birthday week,
all
isn't
kinds
it?
Of stuff. Yeah, she had 4 friends over yesterday, a friend over last night. They out there shooting. And then tomorrow we're going to the water park. We're having dinner, cakes, cookies.
You only turn 9 once.
Stamps. We talking about.
You're going to have a lot of fun, Owen.
Lord knows.
I was just mentioning this earlier because we had a little girl in the studio, and her mom, or I think it was her grandmother, said she loves hats. She's looking at your hat collection. I said, pick a hat. And she went and she picked a hat. She was probably 7, 6. She wore the hat out. And I was thinking, man, I still have dreams about when my kids were that little. You gotta enjoy those years. Those are special years.
Yes.
Then they grow up and they're just jerks. right, Jeff? Am I wrong? Am I wrong,
Mr.
Jarvis?
I'm not saying the word.
No. No, but you love them still. Our show today brought to you by Stamps.com. Wow. Oh, and how did you know? When I send that card to Leah, I'm going to make sure it has a lovely Twit logo on it, my return address. Her address will be printed right from my printer, right on the envelope, because I use Stamps.com. You don't want to make a trip to the post office to buy stamps. That's so old world. Maybe you've been doing that for a long time, but I'll tell you what, you can really up your shipping game, whatever your business is, whether you're a seller on eBay or Amazon or Etsy, whether you have a business, you send out bills and brochures, Stamps.com is the easy way to do everything you would do at the post office without getting up from your desk. Yes, you can buy and print real U.S. postage right from your computer and your printer. You don't need special ink. You don't need a postage meter. Just what you already have with Stamps.com. You also can do all the package stuff that you like to do, including right in the application, buy insurance, even get discounted insurance. You can get certified mail. You can fill out the forms for international mail. It does it all for you. And with Stamps.com, you get this great digital scale. I'll tell you how to do that in a second. That makes sure there's no guesswork. You have exactly the right postage. And I'll tell you, nothing sends a worse impression, and I get it all the time, than postage due from a PR firm. I get these PR.
Wow.
It's like, dude, I don't want to get your mail in the first place, but to make me pay for it, come on.
Wow.
Why aren't they using Stamps.com? Here's the deal. Go to Stamps.com. Click the microphone in the upper right-hand corner and use the offer code TWIT. What you're going to get is a really nice $110 bonus offer that includes that digital scale. It's a USB scale. You also get $55 worth of postage coupons. Now, the scale you're going to have to pay shipping for, that's $5, but you get a $5 supply kit that balances that out. And, of course, you get a 30-day free trial of Stamps.com. Stamps.com is awesome. And if you're doing any kind of mailing in your business, you really got to try it. And why not? Risk-free, $110 bonus offer. cancel any time in that first 4 weeks, and you keep the scale. That's not a problem. It's a gift to you from Stamps.com. Go to Stamps.com, click the microphone, top of the homepage, use the offer code TWIT, Stamps.com. We thank them for their support of this week in tech. Wow.
Gotta catch them all.
Gotta catch them all. No, none of you are playing the Pokemon game, and yet everywhere I go in Petaluma, I see people playing Pokemon Go. It is.
I can't get past the tutorial. I'm so old.
Well, it's using this new technique. Snapchat pioneered this, where it's completely opaque. There's no rules.
Yeah.
They don't tell you anything. And I realize it's the best marketing ever, because what happens, especially with apps aimed at like the 20-year-old.
People that have time to waste.
There's kids know, and then they tell their friends because they want to look smart. Hey, you know, I could show you how to do this. And I actually had, Chris was doing that. Chris is like a freshman in college. He's showing me how to use Pokemon Go, and I realize this is the best marketing ever. Same thing with Snapchat, right?
Yeah.
You get your friends telling you about it. Oh, you got
to use
this.
Completely unintelligible to a normal human being,
right.
But you have to, you know, which I think is part of why they sort of want to keep people like over 30, you know, out of it. And so, so you know, you have to figure it out or have somebody tell you. Oh, you just when you open it up, it goes straight to the camera.
Nintendo's stock price up 15% by the end of the week thanks to this. Although that doesn't make any sense, but that's, you know, that's the stock market. It's a creation from Niantic, which is a former Google company. It was actually before that, it was Keyhole, the satellite mapping company that Google bought to add satellite imagery to Google Maps. They went on, they said, hey, we got some ideas. They created Ingress Field Trip for Google. Then Google spun them out. And now this, and this is probably going to be their most successful. It is sweeping the nation. I hear about colleges, people roaming campuses. We just went up to the park before the show yesterday, and people were playing the game. Somebody had set a lure, so there were a lot of Pokemon around. It's an augmented reality game. So when you get a vibration saying there's a Pokemon, and then you see the world you're in, the park, and you can get the Pokemon. It's over there by the bush.
Yeah.
You're probably not telling you anything you don't already know, because Instagram, Facebook, Twitter are filled with images of Pokemon in the real world.
Yeah. I was in the hotel on the elevator. There's like this youth leadership conference at my hotel, and there's like three or four kids in the elevator. They're all just playing. I'm like, what are they doing? Why are they all so engrossed in their phones? They're all sitting there not talking to each other. They're all playing Pokemon Go and sort of not even looking up, but every once in a while they'll sort of make a sound or a grunt toward each other.
Sorry, I'm playing now. I'm not hearing anything you're
well,
saying.
Well, to kind of tie it back to our previous conversation, I think the timing was really good on this, because we were all just kind of a little down, and along comes this fun game, which does two things that I think are valuable. Gets us out of the house, because you have to walk
That's
around.
That's true.
You can't
That's
play true. It like in your basement. You have to go walk around. I've done 15 kilometers in 2 days playing this dumb game. And you talk to people, and you join teams, and there's this conversation. And I've talked to more people in Petaluma in the last 2 days than probably even my whole 20 years living here. So there is some value to it.
Oh, that's funny.
Isn't
it? It sounds funny. I love listening to Bubble Talk and how the world works.
Like, this is a big bubble.
You're out here talking about talking to people and getting out in the
crazy
world.
Idea. I know. Yeah.
I'm out here living and talking and hanging out. But like I said, grown men are the dominant figure in Pokemon. Don't get twisted. Most of these kids don't have cell phones. And that's why you saw
it's college kids, I think. I think college kids.
They could steal their parents' phone for 10 minutes while their parents aren't using it and play Pokemon. But there's like 35-year-old men skipping and hopping and jumping all across the land.
Security researcher Jonathan Zdarsky.
Reliving their Pokemon dreams.
Jonathan Zdarsky said, oh, nice move, Google. You figure out a way to get everybody to volunteer their GPS coordinates at all times. Google does not have anything to do with this. I don't think. They may still have a stake in
Niantic. They have a piece of Niantic.
They have a piece of it, right. One player in Wyoming stumbled across a dead body. She was, more Pokemon, different kinds of Pokemon show up near bodies of water. She was near a river. She climbed over a fence to get to the river to get the Pokemon, and then lo and behold, there's a dead body. They're not related to Pokemon Go, we don't think. But anyway, there was a group of robbers in Missouri used. So one of the things that happens is you go to places where there are lots of Pokemon. They put a lure on a Pokestop. And then when dumb kids at 2 a.m. kind of wandered down this alley trying to find the Pokemon, they robbed them. Shopping center parking lots, they stuck them up.
Wow.
And then there's a guy named Boone Sheridan who lives in a former church that was flagged as a public place. This is all from Cory Doctorow's Boing Boing. And there you go. The militarization of the Pokemon is just around the corner. He's being bugged on his quiet road by Pokemon players who are lingering, blocking traffic, and freaking out his neighbors. I'm telling you, folks.
Wow.
This is going to be a fad that's going to sweep the nation. In about 2 weeks, you'll forget it even happened.
Yeah. Yep. It's the farm. It's got Farmville written all over it.
Yeah.
Did you read about a hack or something about Pokemon?
There
Go,
are
or?
A number of virus hacks or yes. malware hacks. So be very careful. Get it from the official store. If you sideload, I bet you they're posing as cheat tools for Pokemon.
Yeah.
But if you sideload these, at least one of them has a remote access Trojan built into it. And of course, Android lets you sideload. It is. I think there's probably nothing more to say about it. It is a bubble.
I found the nice story that I talked about before we went on the air. The World Peace link there.
Oh yeah, tell us. So go ahead. You do it. That's your story.
Oh, all right.
You don't have to give it to me.
We like the way Jeff tells it.
No, now I got to open the damn link.
No, you want me to do it? I'll do it for you. This comes from the elitedaily.com. How appropriate is that URL? Guy tells epic story about recruiting a cop to play Pokemon Go. You see, it is really bringing people together. So a fellow wandering around, let's see, this is a Sloth of Doom. I guess this is from Reddit. Couldn't sleep, so I downloaded the game, took a 3 a.m. walk. Okay, can I just say, probably should do this not in the middle of the night?
Yeah.
There's a little park a few blocks from me that had like 3 Pokestops and a gym. Pokestops are good because you can gather Pokeballs. Gyms are where you attack other Pokemon players trying to take them over, kind of like Ingress. So I wandered over there to see what the game could offer. Picked up an Eevee outside my house and a couple of trash pokes on the way to the park. Yeah, you know, those pokes that aren't so useful. This guy's talking the talk, obviously.
Already. I mean, it's already a language, yeah.
So I get there and wander around a little, checking out the stops and rustling around the tall grass. Then decide to go a few blocks away to see a couple more stops. When I hear from the darkness, yo, my man. Turning, I see 2 sketchy-looking dudes sitting on a bench in the dark. I must have walked right past them without noticing them. Great. One of them waves, my man, check over by the blue truck over there. We got an Onyx earlier.
Not great.
So I wander over by the truck. Sure enough, there's an effing Onyx there. Awesome. So I end up chatting with the guys for a bit. Told them where I got my Eevee. They convinced me to join Red Team when I hit level 5 so we could, quote, lock stuff down in the neighborhood. Then the cop shows up. Well, of course, it's 3 a.m. There's 4 seedy-looking characters hanging out in a park. Turns out that the 220-something black dudes and a 40-year-old white guy chilling in the park at 3 a.m. looks strange, he writes. It took a bit of talking to convince the cop we weren't doing a drug deal. A bit longer to explain the game. Then the cop downloaded the game on his phone and asked us how to get started. Go Red Team.
I have no idea whether that's at all true, but
it's
nice.
It's totally true.
Yeah.
It's totally true. It's on Reddit. Why? How could it not be true?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
If it's not true, it's the most truth we need at this time.
It's as true as it needs to be.
Yeah, right? Exactly. It's true enough to make me feel good inside, so I believe it. Just like I believe Facebook glitched. I believe.
See, yeah, you and Siva think I'm just an airheaded kind of Pollyanna for thinking the world's a nice place, but I want to believe.
Really well, the do. World's a nice place when you live in your own empire and run the town that you live in that you've been dominating.
Oh, yeah. It's a gated community. Years. Yeah, no, you're right. I live in a gated community. Yeah. A virtual gate.
The whole town is your town, Leo.
It's my town. I wander around. Here's a story from Gizmodo. Sore legs become pandemic as Pokemon Go players accidentally get exercise. Film at 11.
That's a great headline.
That is a great headline. Let me tell you, this has become... iMore has already done 30 how-to articles. This game came out on Wednesday.
What?
Talk about... I mean, everybody's jumping on this. It's crazy.
Wow.
It's crazy. Here's a tweet from Fancakes. I took an hour-long bike ride yesterday for Pokemon Go. My legs are sore. The last time I rode a bike was like 4 or 5 years ago. Here's from NX Lana. My feet and legs are so sore from Pokemon Go today. I got an hour of sleep, but took over a gym and gained 5 levels. So it was pretty good.
Hey, you can't argue with that. I mean, if they're actually getting people out of the house. And,
I'm telling
you,
15 kilometers
people,
yesterday.
That's I mean,
a year from now, somebody's going to be sitting on Ellen, and he's going to be like, I spent my whole retirement traveling the globe, and guess what? I caught them all. Thanks very much. Like, he's going to be the most popular man in the world. He's going to quit his job, leave his family, and he's going to go out and catch them all.
Can you imagine, like, those Subway guy stories with Pokemon Go?
Oh,
it's
yeah.
It's going to be, like, you know, commercials.
Yeah, that's
like
just what Jared, what Pokemon needs is another Jared. That'll help.
The one thing you were talking about Nintendo stock, this is, Nintendo is a genius at mobile content. Their platform is horrible. I mean, Leanne and her friends play it, but they only play like two games. Like, they need to capture the magic that they're doing with mobile, with the DS and everything else on their platform. They need to get rid of all that extra stuff, go back to just making great, solid games, because mobile is what's keeping them afloat right now.
You know what's truly sad?
Yeah.
According to Forbes, Pokemon Go is about to surpass Twitter in daily active users.
Oh, man.
Oh, ow!
Yeah, that's a 24-hour phenomenon.
Wow. Yeah.
That's not that exciting. That's a new thing. Show me that in a month.
Yeah, I don't exactly. know. I think this was got staying power. Oh, sure. I fell for Flappy Bird. I fell for
Farmville.
I fell for Wii Rule. I spent $300 on donuts and The Simpsons Tapped Out, but this one.
So this could be the one. This could be the one.
The game has staying power. The curve does not. That's what I'm saying, right? It's gonna flatten out, and there will be a hardcore group of devoted players, and it'll be sizable. It'll be significant. But, you know, we have a hardcore group of devoted chess players in America, too. But, you know, it doesn't have a curve like that.
By the way,
that.
I'm one of those
This guy's
those
a chess
well.
Champion.
I'm one of those as well, Sam.
So yeah, you know, I'm
really
sure it's
you're like the Renaissance man of games, you know.
How's Second Life treating you these days?
Oh, man, I got my nude suit the other day, and I go out there, and I just have so much fun with the furries, and it's great. I love it.
Yeah. It's a Pokemon product. It's probably well thought out. It's interesting. It captures something that millions of people are already into. Like it's got everything going for it, but that curve's not going to go up forever. It's going to flatten out and then go down, and it'll be fine. It'll be a part of our lives like everything else.
Wait till winter hits. Winter is coming.
Oh, no. Winter is coming.
Is the list of things that are bigger than Twitter. We get a new one of those every week.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
So, man, that's like horses. That's like the new, you know, insult or the new, you know, whatever. It's bigger
Twitter's
than Twitter.
Your benchmark. Oh, let's go with Twitter, huh? Okay.
General Tao in our chat room says, hey, Hooli has more daily active users than Twitter nowadays.
Man, this is getting depressing.
Oh, Twitter, why can't I quit you? Israel calls Facebook a monster for not helping to curb violence. There you go. There's an example of kind of, man.
Yeah. That's the missing piece in curbing violence in the Middle East.
Yeah, it's up to Facebook. Israel's justice minister, Gilad Erdan, says Facebook is a monster because it's not doing enough to curb online content that incites violence against Israel.
I mean, this is the flip side of that argument, right, with the takedown of the video, because if we're giving them the benefit of the doubt, it was likely taken down because of the violence.
Yeah, there's blood.
Right? Yeah. So, but then there's other people on the other side, right, that are calling on Facebook to, like, get these violent videos off
it's
of there.
It's a no-win situation for them. So, right? How tough is that? I mean,
But it's absurd to think that a place that has been racked with violence for 100 years.
Yes.
Racked with terrorism for 100 years is somehow suffering more or less
because of
anything Facebook can do.
I don't know. We can't underestimate it being a force multiplier, though, to mix metaphors.
Get ready, because Facebook has now introduced end-to-end encryption on Facebook Messenger, joining WhatsApp, which is also a Facebook product. Apple's iMessages have done this for some time. You're going to see more and more products offering encryption. And I think that is, you know, essentially giving encryption to 1.5 billion people.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that's when I think you get governments going away. We can't. I mean, Brazil's been trying to take Facebook, WhatsApp down for a year.
Maybe an even more interesting related story, though, is the thing. And this came out from the U.S. government. So, you know, who has a dog in the fight. But they said that you know, ISIS propaganda or ISIS, you know, Twitter traffic has dropped by half in the past 2 years because of using social networks like this anti-propaganda, going in and showing, you know, ISIS is recruited with social media primarily. And
so are they doing some sort of active campaign on Twitter to tell people don't join ISIS?
So they say, here's what ISIS does
for
to women. Here's what ISIS does to children. Here's what ISIS does. And now they aren't just obviously just the U.S. government going out and doing it. They're partnering with local organizations, local outlets, and they are helping them craft, you know, the messages. They're getting the stories from them, putting them in natural languages, in Arabic, in, you know, local languages, local dialects, and getting them out. And that message on social media is having a tremendous impact, according, you know, to this story.
But let's also remember that there are a lot of other people, just unaffiliated individuals across Europe, who have spread the word that ISIS is offering false promises to the people who decide to pack up and move to Syria, where life is horrible. And there have been thousands of people who have been recruited to ISIS in Syria who are desperate to get back to their lives in Europe now, because it turns out life's really horrible there. And it's not the paradise they were promised. So there are lots of voices against ISIS that have nothing to do with the U.S. government. They are local. They are distributed. They are largely originally in Arabic, right? There are lots of arguments against ISIS made by the 99% of the Muslim world that has nothing to do with ISIS and actually despises it.
Yes.
So, you know, you can't credit the U.S. with it, but, you know, it's good that it's all part of a plan. But look, and the other thing is, ISIS has been on the run for 2 years. It's been steadily losing territory and unable to build itself out as an actual functioning state consistently. So there are a lot of good reasons that ISIS is losing right now. And of course, the terrorism is all part of its desperation.
It's interesting, though, that the social media becomes one of the tools, however effective it is.
Because those other, to your point, Siva, it was their stories, the people in those communities themselves, not the U.S. was helping them package it and tell those stories on social media better, because the problem was ISIS was really good at telling these stories using propaganda on social media. And that's what was influencing people to come and join. And they were using the locals to help them package and tell their stories better and in ways that on social media reach people are a counterpoint to the
I'm just cynical about the idea that the U.S. government knows what it's doing.
Well, I agree with you on that.
Those stories by ISIS were because people are not intelligent, and there's always going to be slow people in the world, and at least somebody's trying
to help. There's always people who want to believe whatever
that is. Here's the thing. Like, you have Google, so even if somebody told me that this place is a paradise, I'm moving out of this location now because it is due in part to where I live and all the stuff's going on in the world. So I went to go looking for a new house. I called a guy on the phone about his property. He told me this story that just sounded unbelievable by his company. And he's like, oh, do you want to sign up today? And I said, what's the name of your company again? He's like, oh, blah, blah, blah. I was like, all right, well, I'm going to hang up and Google it.
Let me Google you.
Yeah. Like, so if you're telling me that there's Shangri-La and whoop-de-woo and cookie dough, you know what I'm going to do? Hey, let's go look at the cookie dough in Syria. The fact that people don't do that, get on a plane to go to Syria. And I want to come home. You might as well stay there because the light bulb is not on.
I think part of the problem was
just that when they looked it up, when they did Google it or look for it, they weren't finding the counterpoint, right?
So now they do.
Now they find the counterpoint. Yeah. It's easy to find.
Love this tweet from Jenny Jardin, who's a friend of the show. She's a Boing Boing contributor. She tweeted a cup not so long ago, July 3rd. Dude, ISIS is bombing Muslim. By the way, I don't think she thought a lot of people would read this tweet. Dude, ISIS is bombing Muslim people in Muslim communities during the Muslim holy month of Ramadan. How is ISIS Muslim? No, they're psychopaths.
Yeah.
Almost 60,000 retweets, 44,000 likes.
Viral.
It went viral is an understatement.
Sometimes a simple truth like that can make such a difference.
It's awesome.
Like those words that someone should have said so succinctly at any time in the last 5 years.
Does it make a difference is the question. Sure, at 55,000 retweets, favorite.
No, No, it doesn't make a difference because people say that all the time. It's the same silly thing I hear when people try to talk about black on black crime. A lot of Muslims go out and I see them on my Twitter feed, people that are sharing them, and they denounce ISIS all the time. And nobody cares. That tweet blew up because she said, dude, and it was cool. And she's got a little following and it carries the direct message. But we give those messages all the time. Yeah. But for some reason, they don't stick because there is a subset and a group that counterbalances that and says, well, everybody is this. And they just paint this whole brush. Every cop is bad.
What I worry about, and I guess I'm not, this is nothing, this is no great insight, is just is that we aren't, we're polarized and we're not, one side's not hearing the other side anymore. And so each of us is.
You know, that's the standard, you know, echo chamber argument. I think we're more aware of arguments than we were before. I think
people.
But this goes back to Owen's point. There's always going to be dumb people. There's always going to be stupid people. I think one difference is you don't, in a post-mass world, you don't need the scale you needed to cause damage. You don't need to have an army to fight like an army. Whether it's a guerrilla war or a terroristic war or a cyber war,
and
what's the role of a government army in that kind of world? What's the counterpoint that you make? The State Department, I went to an event at the State Department a year ago, kind of like, what do we do? How do we counteract this? You counteract with more information, but as Owen said, there's always going to be friggin' idiots out there.
It seems like there's more of them than there used to be.
No, they have more ability to be seen.
Yes. And more more transparent.
You don't think we're heading towards idiocracy?
They find each other, each other too.
Yeah.
So, social media, hashtag.
I never argue about politics on Facebook. Like,
Twitter's worse, right?
Yeah, Twitter's really bad, too.
I had the temerity to post a statistic, an actual statistic, saying that a black, unarmed black person was 3.49 times more likely to get shot by police than an unarmed white person. And in some counties in the United States, 20 times.
Yes.
It's a fact. It's just a fact. And I was amazed at the number of people who said, well, they deserve, if in effect, well, they deserve it.
Even the kind response, the kind response to that is when someone says, well, Owen, more whites are shot by police officers than blacks. I'm like, well, first of all, you should be mad about that. And the fact that you don't is a problem. Also, white people outnumber us by the percentages. We're still 90%. Three times higher.
Right.
But with a smaller percentage of people, so they don't understand math, which goes back to people being dumb. But even when they say, you know how many white people were shot unarmed by police last year? You don't see us complaining. And I'm like, you don't care about your people?
The one that got me was the tweet that, and I almost responded, and then I thought, I'm not going to end this conversation. Something about black men shooting police officers. And I wanted to tweet, to my knowledge, not one single unarmed black man has ever shot anybody. But but
that's,
I thought,
funny. Why didn't you tweet that?
I thought, this is just going to set the world on fire, and I don't want it.
It wasn't Rudy Giuliani?
It was like, that is so unrelated. Anyway, the point being, it looks, I guess because I look at Twitter and Facebook, it looks to me as if we're highly polarized. No one's hearing anybody else.
It's actually not. So I had this is the one argument I had recently because people, I had this argument. Somebody on my Facebook was like, it's more polarized and it's more of this. And I said, actually, if you look at the facts, Pew has done some great research in recent years. There are more, the share of independents in the 75 years that they've been counting them is higher than ever. It's 39% to 32% registered Democrat, 23% registered Republican. And if you look at the next generation, it's even more. It's 48% of under 34 are independent, sure. Right?
And now that.
What does that mean? What is it? Does independent mean they're open-minded and questing, or they gave up?
Is that party affiliation is a very rough proxy for what Leo's describing and concerned about. We can form communities of habit that willfully ignore other points of view through many of our affiliations beyond political party. So we could have religious communities. We could have class-based communities. We could have race and ethnic-based communities that allow us to huddle.
Absolutely.
That's a dynamic that occurs on all sorts of different ways. Pokemon players, right, could be so locked into being Pokemon players that they have no interaction with chess players. Not that that would be...
I am here to bridge that gap.
That's been all through human history, right? The clannishness has been all through human history.
That's human nature.
Which is why I don't know that there's any real evidence for Leo's concern. I think it's something a lot of people say and a lot of people kind of feel. I do know that...
Remember, though, that I live in Northern California.
Right.
And if you were to state a conservative position to many people in this town, you would be a pariah. They would say, "What are you, insane?"
I'm with you, man. But here's the thing: what we've substituted in America, and again, just talking about America, has nothing to do with social media. We have replaced what was heavy racial and ethnic segregation. And a situation where we really only spoke to our coworkers, neighbors, churchgoers, et cetera.
True.
We've replaced that with class segregation.
It was zip code segregation. Now it's class segregation.
Yeah. So it turns out we do actually talk to people of different religious and political affiliations with some regularity if we are of a class strata that allows for that comfortable level of interaction. But we almost never speak to people who share our ethnic or religious affiliations, who are of a different socioeconomic class, because we've resegregated America so much along, for instance, school district lines.
Right.
Can I ask the panel a question?
Yes.
Does everybody here back up their computers?
Do you have the list somewhere in front of you? Are you?
I'm just wondering if I know Dev backs up. I'm pretty sure
you're just answering Owen's need.
I'm trying to get tapped into Jeff Jarvis's archive so I can find out.
You're anticipating his needs.
He knows my needs.
Is this on the rundown somewhere?
Man knows my needs.
By the way, Owen, did you name your daughter after Leo?
Yes. He denies it.
Maybe.
He denies it. But I know he did for a fact.
Yeah.
Actually, my old high school girlfriend, who I was out of touch with for 40 years, we met each other on Facebook and started talking. She named her son Leo. And I said, "Oh, that's sweet." She said, "Well, it had nothing to do with you."
I said, okay. Sure it did.
Happens to be your child, but that's another story.
Our show today brought to you by Carbonite Online Backup. Now is the time to change the subject. You got to keep your business safe. You got to protect your data. And the best way to do it was with automatic, continuous cloud backup. Now, I don't have anything against backing up locally. That's good. That's a fine thing to do. You should have that as part of an overall backup strategy. But you got to have off-site backups, because if something really bad happens, fire, flood, tornado, disaster, somebody steals your stuff, you've got to have a way of getting that data back. And you know what's really bad? Ransomware. And we're seeing this big time. 95% of all phishing emails these days contain ransomware viruses. That means a virus, and we're seeing it on phones too now, amazingly, a virus that gets on your system, locks your data, and then says, "Pay us if you ever want to see your data again." You know what the cure is? Carbonite. That local backup may not help you because it's going to back up those encrypted files too, but Carbonite has versioning on Windows, and that means you can go back to the previous version of the file that was unencrypted, delete the virus first, restore your data, you're good to go, and you didn't give $300 to the bad guy. You gave Carbonite like $5 a month. That's where Carbonite starts, $5 a month for everything on your computer. You buy it by the year, which is nice, so you can set it and forget it. It's backing up whenever you're online. You don't even have to think about it. No downtime. Carbonite has 1.5 million customers at home and small businesses. 500 billion files backed up, but the one I really like is 50 billion files restored. That's 50 billion files that would have been lost forever. Carbonite. You got to try it free. In fact, I really encourage you, try it free first. Pick your plan at carbonite.com. You don't need to give them a credit card, just our offer code TWIT. And the reason I want you to do that, besides the fact that we get credit, is then you get 2 months free when you buy. You got to back it up to get it back. Do it right with Carbonite. Try it free. No credit card required, just the offer code TWIT at carbonite.com. Fun week this week. I'm going to give everybody a little chance to get a cup of coffee, cup of tea. We'll wrap this up in a minute. But before I do, let's get a synopsis. A little tiny mini movie made of all the fun bits that happened this week on Twit Watch.
Previously on Twit.
There's a bit of mouse running around.
I saw it run by earlier. It was really weird.
Oh my God, Brian!
Sorry.
That was awesome.
Windows Weekly,
23 days and counting to the end of free Windows 10.
Hey, brace yourself, because 1 month from today, what we're going to be dealing with is people saying, wait, wait, wait. You mean I can't get this?
Not anymore? What happened? Why didn't you tell me this?
This week in Enterprise Tech.
There is one router that keeps chugging on 11 years after its release. It's the Linksys WRT54GL, but this is still a bestseller for Linksys.
It's known, it's hackable, it's fast enough, and it's cheap. I think that if nothing else, the folks who tend to show up at maker fairs could provide a viable market for these things for a long time to come.
This week in Google.
By the way, Goggles is still around. I apologize.
It is.
Oh my God, it worked.
Oh, you're kidding.
It says, This Week in Tech, MP3 edition, Petaluma Landmark. I should do it to you, Jeff, because it probably...
Okay, do it to me.
There you go. We found you, Jeff. Okay, now we're going to do Stacey's face. Analyzing. Oh, I'm so sorry.
Twit, making the world safe for technology.
I don't know why that happened. Clearly, Google's not paying attention to Goggles anymore. Big week ahead. Let's see what's happening.
Thanks, Leo. Here's a few things that we'll be tracking in the upcoming week. First, Huawei will begin selling its Surface competitor, the Huawei MateBook laptop tablet hybrid device, in the U.S. on Monday, July 11th. It ships with Windows 10 Signature Edition. Pricing is going to start at $699, and Huawei claims it's the lightest 12-inch tablet on the market today. So maybe that floats your boat. On Tuesday, July 12th, Amazon will hold its second annual Prime Day, hosting more than 100,000 deals for its Prime members, many being featured on a five-minute rotation. Those of you, if you happen to have an Amazon Echo, can get in on some deals before everyone else using Alexa to shop. So consider that little tip in advance of the big day. On Wednesday, July 13th, Google's officially booting ads for payday loans and predatory financial services from its channels online. Google says this is aimed at protecting its users from harmful products and misleading business practices. And on Thursday, July 14th, Motorola is going to announce pricing for its anticipated new crop of flagship Android devices, the Moto Z and Z Force. Motorola is banking on the appeal of modular smartphones as it moves to diversify its products from the rest of the pack. The Moto Force will be exclusive to Verizon, with the Moto Z going global later in September. And I can't wait to see them. That's just a few things we're going to be keeping a close eye on in the week ahead. Now, back to you, Leo.
Thank you, Jason Howell. Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 2300 UTC for your daily dose of tech news, TNT. One thing that's happening a week from Monday, the final selection process for Yahoo's new owners. A little hitch in the get-along, though. It was reported this week that even if Yahoo gets sold to somebody, Mozilla can, what was it, boot them out as their search tool. Let me make sure, and still get $1 billion Jeez. Over the next few years.
Jesus.
So if you're a buyer, you know, bidding from $2 to $3 billion for Yahoo, you might wonder, gee, is this such a good deal? Because Mozilla has a peremptory right to say, oh, yeah, we don't like the new owners. We're going to stop using Yahoo search in our browser. And, oh, you still have to pay us $1 billion over the next 3 years. $375 million a year.
I can't remember. Is the sale still include the China?
No.
Equity?
I do. No, you get nothing. You get nothing. You get TV.com. You get OMG.com. You get Flickr.com. You get Yahoo Mail. Oy.
Yeah. Yahoo Weather App.
Yahoo Weather App, fabulous. Except I was told by a professional meteorologist, oh, don't use that. Swear to God. I said, how do you survive as a meteorologist? Everybody's got weather everywhere. He said, well, you know. I said, I use Yahoo Weather. He said, oh, well, that's how I survive as a meteorologist. That thing's the worst. Don't use that.
It uses one of the other. It uses AccuWeather or something.
I use Weather Underground.
Weather Underground's
the
best.
They all get their information from the National Weather Service.
That's what he said. That's exactly what he said. He said, just use the National Weather Service.
On all of them.
Yeah. It's all about the interpretation, though.
Weather Underground actually has some local station, some localizing.
I have one that actually shows you time lapses from local stations all over the place. In fact,
weather.com still working with Watson.
Yeah.
And having all these reporting stations.
How's that working?
Since IBM bought it, yeah.
They're planning some stuff. It'll be interesting. David Kenny is doing some neat stuff there.
Is
I haven't used a weather app in 5 years.
Why? Don't you want to know what it's like, Al?
Meaning I don't have any additional app on. I just use whatever's on a phone. If I'm using an Android device, an iPhone, I just use that. I don't have any additional devices.
Why are we obsessed with apps? Weather?
It's such a weird thing. I mean, especially in California, it's pretty much the same every day here.
The weather out there doesn't change, so what do you care? You're in Petaluma.
But everybody loves the weather change. You know what? I think it's like watching nature videos. It's soothing.
Or like the food channel, like watching people prepare food, you know?
This is what we really need, is we don't want to know what's going on.
Also, I remember when my kids were little, I could watch put the weather channel on and do something. And the commercials, there would be no sort of weird, crazy commercials. It would be all just, stuff for cheese and butter.
People stay at home, eat a lot of cheese and butter. What do you want?
I think that's a Midwest thing. I don't think I was getting cheese and butter commercials out here.
You don't get the cheese and butter commercials, for margarine.
I can't believe it's not butter.
You don't sit there and watch food TV long enough, Owen. I think you need to watch you some Food Network.
Yeah, I got enough food going on my plate.
This is a little scary, and somebody pointed out this is really potentially very dangerous technology. Apple has patented a way to stop you from recording video at concerts, a feature in the phone that would detect some sort of anti-video signal and not work. Now, remember, patenting it is not a big deal. I mean, if somebody thinks of it in an Apple board meeting, then the Apple lawyers patent it. But the terrifying thing is but what if law enforcement used this infrared emitter?
Hey,
exactly.
Are you a verified brother? Because that's the first thing I thought when I saw that.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, anybody can just get a hold of this signal and just start broadcasting this signal around?
Yeah.
That's not cool. I don't like that.
See, Apple wants to get good with the music industry because they're basically playing a sucker game with the music industry, hoping the music industry will embrace Apple and Apple Music, put Spotify and everybody else out of business, and Apple have a monopoly. And they just hope Tay-Tay can convince Warner Brothers and everybody else to do that.
Their music revenue, is in serious risk now.
Yeah.
All people are going to do is use another device. That's it.
Yeah. Well, bring a couple of cameras just in case, right?
Yeah. People that steal. They find a way around it. They don't.
I'll just use my Google Glass.
There you go.
Do you still have it?
Oh, yeah.
I've still got one.
You paid $1,500 for it.
I don't wear it. Out.
Yeah, do you wear it? Maybe the
no one else is going to buy it.
Here's a good move from the New Zealand Parliament, I guess you call it. The Harmful Digital Communications Act. And I'm being perhaps a little sarcastic. This is something that's been under debate in New Zealand for 3 years. Parliament apparently has passed it. It allows, you're going to love this, Jeff Jarvis. Anybody who doesn't like, some trollish comment can complain to the hosting company or ISP, and they remove it. They're required to remove it nearly automatically. And under the new system, if you want to appeal it, you have a mere 24 hours to appeal it, and you must provide your home address.
Whoa.
Wow.
So this comes from Danny O'Brien at the EFF, and thanks to Boing Boing for pointing it out. The Parliament passed.
It's a dangerous, dangerous trend. Look, I mentioned earlier in the show that an Italian court ruled that news organizations must take down things people don't like after 2 years. We have the right to be forgotten decision. We have the effort to cut off video. This is all about free speech. It's all about the notion that you can control knowledge. And once something's known, you suddenly now shouldn't know it.
Many of us have no reason to love internet trolls, but you'd be nuts to pass a law like this, because all it does is really facilitate trolls. If you really wanted to troll somebody, you'd get their internet presence removed from the face of the earth.
Right.
Yeah. Yep.
Right.
And then they have to reveal their home address in case.
Well, there was a case tonight. I didn't put it on the rundown. I don't think it's there, but evidently a cop and a guy got into a fight about current news. And the guy allegedly went to the cop's house, and the cop shot and killed him.
Oh, Lord.
Because it was a known identity. And, they could have gotten an argument in a bar, too. But, we live in a progressive society where knowledge and it's not the knowledge that hurts. It's what you do with it. It's when you're stupid and do stupid things with it. But knowledge should never be seen in and of itself as dangerous. Communication should not be seen in and of itself as dangerous. That's not the way. Controlling that is not the solution to world peace. It's the opposite.
I was thinking of moving to New Zealand, but maybe I won't now.
I don't know. I saw a wonderful image after Brexit, had the New Zealand flag and an arrow up to the Union Jack saying, "We're with stupid."
Yeah. Here's another country you don't want to move to. Putin has just signed a sweeping surveillance measure into law on Thursday. The easy part is it compels telephone companies and internet service providers to save and store private communications of all of its customers for 6 months. That includes phone calls, text messages, and emails, and metadata for 3 years. But maybe even more significantly, other provisions effectively outlaw the use of encryption within Russia and introduce new penalties for individuals accused of inciting terrorism through social media. Dark day for Russia, said Edward Snowden, who lives there.
I was about to say, isn't Snowden still hanging out there?
Yeah, he lives there.
Consulted him about that?
Putin instructed Russia's FSB, the Federal Security Service, to... this is where being a dictator kind of goes to your head. He said, you have 2 weeks to acquire the means necessary to decrypt all data sent across the internet. 2 weeks. Can you work on that fast, guys?
Or it's Siberia for you.
I'm giving you a deadline. And that really makes you Facebook and WhatsApp and Apple's iMessages. I guess you wouldn't be able to buy an iPhone in Russia if this is enforced.
Apple's taking it on the chin. They're taking it on the chin in China. They're taking it on the chin in Russia now. Because, exactly. That's going to cause them some serious problems.
Yeah.
Or they just make that new super unencrypted iPhone Russia Lite version with 8 gigs in it.
Yeah. and a back door for Putin.
Do we talk about Netflix on my desktop box?
Netflix X1, the piece of crap Comcast. I'm sorry, did I say that? The set-top box offered by Comcast.
Bitter, are we?
I hate it. Well, I'm a Comcast customer. I've slowly replaced the X1s. We still have one left. It's like the worst. You press fast forward on an X1, and it just keeps going. You press stop, 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 stop. They don't want you to skip. They really don't want you to skip. You press rewind, it goes all the way back to the end. Stop!
Yeah.
It's just the worst. Anyway, I replaced mine with TiVo's. You know what's great about TiVo? I don't know how they got away with this. They have a skip all the ads button.
Really?
How did they get away with that?
That's got to be
it. Even when an ad starts, you're watching The Voice, right? The ad starts on your recording of The Voice, and a little chime goes off that says you can skip the ad. Press the green button.
Really?
And you just press the green button and the ads are gone.
They got to be in court for that somewhere.
Well, I noticed they got sold to a company called Rovi that says, we don't want to make the hardware anymore. So maybe.
Yeah.
Comcast is going to let customers, this is bizarre, put a Netflix app on their set-top box. These are hereditary enemies, my friends.
Yeah, this is like.
It's a little too late.
This is such a head-scratcher. Sorry, go ahead. Go on.
Well, for me, like, I know a lot of people that are either thinking about cutting a cord or whatever. I'll give an example of my friend who has Netflix. They pay for it, and I ask him, why don't you guys ever watch Netflix when I come over here? He's like, I got to change to the other box. I'm always just watching TV, so we just watch what's on demand. I'm like, then why are you paying for Netflix? He's like, I already bought the box. So for people like him, maybe he might put it on another box, and maybe they might use it. But they should have done this a long time ago just to retain people from leaving them.
Well, but does anybody not have Netflix on 24 devices?
On your TV itself.
On everything, on your TV.
That's why I said too little, too late.
Right. It's too late. We already got Netflix.
Yeah.
I can Chromecast it. I can.
And nobody wants to pay to rent your box, dummy. You keep charging me $16 a month when I could go buy something for $89 and be dunsies. And that box will last me 5, 8, 9, 12 years. So I want to upgrade and get the new, better,
and a much better thing. Box. Anyway, those boxes that they rent you are terrible.
Yeah. Well, that's the X1. I mean, and Comcast bills this as their high tech. You know.
Yeah, DVR we have Time solution. Warner, and I hate those boxes. They're I awful. Do whatever I can to never the touch worst. That thing.
Yeah. Yep. Like I said, too little, too late. I was shocked that they even did it. Why bother now? It's too late.
Yeah.
Unless you're trying to get your grandma on your Netflix account.
The question we asked all this week in Google is Netflix gone to the other side of net neutrality?
Well, that's, yeah, so that was an interesting question. I can't remember who, was it Stacey who brought that up or you, Jeff?
Yeah, and I don't know what the answer is.
Is this zero rating point, Netflix? Because Netflix will no longer count against your bandwidth.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yes, that's true. It doesn't count. Well, however, I should point out that Comcast has raised its bandwidth cap to like a terabyte now, so it's not.
Really? Interesting.
It's not, there's not much of a cap.
Yeah, it's zero rating.
The problem with zero rating is very hard to explain to normal people why that's a bad thing because they're getting, oh, you mean I can listen to, like, it's free. I can watch all the Netflix I want on T-Mobile. Wow, that's awesome. No, it's not.
Yeah.
But go ahead and try to explain it. I've tried.
Yeah.
I gave up.
Is that why you're now switching to T-Mobile?
I'm on T-Mobile for everything. Because zero rating, God bless it. No, I try to explain because I say, well, we're TWIT. We're not zero rated.
Yeah.
And even if they say we could be, it's really not something we can easily do. So that means you're much more likely to watch somebody else's content than YouTube, which is not zero rated, or TWIT. And they say, well, that's fine. I get Netflix, though, right? Yeah, you get Netflix. Can't win. I get Spotify? You know, yeah.
The argument against zero rating actually worked very well in India. It's one of the reasons that there was massive popular opposition to Free Basics, Facebook's effort to roll out a zero rating simple operating system for mobile devices.
See, it's my impression, and maybe this comes from talking to O'Malik, that because of the kind of hereditary bias against imperialism, and the first one's Free Kid, which the British Empire...
Well, that was the thing, is there was widespread suspicion. Of Facebook's motives,
right.
And Facebook did everything wrong.
Right.
Facebook and all of its officials... sounded a lot like imperialists would sound.
Right.
Like, you can trust us.
Yeah.
We mean well. We're just trying to lift you.
We're going to bring you wogs to the civilized world. So, it'll be jolly good.
Very few people in India fell for that.
Yeah.
And but the zero rating became folded into the fact that India and its tech world is very committed to network neutrality because they are trying to develop indigenous platforms.
They're the up and comers.
Right. Yeah. They want to invent the next Facebook and
they
the next
it.
Google, and they don't like being told that they have to take ours.
Right.
So it tapped into nationalism. It tapped into, which is actually stronger than anti-colonialism.
Oh, interesting.
But there also was a fundamental concern for the Indian tech industry and its ability to compete. And the fact that in many of those cases, those particular services that Facebook had chosen. For instance, there was one service chosen to help people find jobs, like a job search app. Well, it turns out there are 10 major job search app companies in India all competing for that market. So 9 of them were really upset that they weren't chosen. And they all mounted the campaign against this and for network neutrality. And that was a big reason. And Facebook just didn't think this stuff through because they were used to dealing with launching Free Basics in places like Botswana, where there isn't a developed tech industry and there isn't widespread concern about network neutrality because most people have never heard about the network in places like that. So being real first movers mattered in places like that. But they totally misread India.
It was a bad move, too, because Facebook is huge in India. I know for our audience, Facebook is almost as large as the U.S. In terms of the amount of traffic that we get. You know, country per country. It is huge, and some of the best interaction we get, some of the best, shares and that kind of thing, commentary, comes from India. And so they had a chance to do something really interesting there, but now they're going to have to, you know, they've created mistrust by funneling.
They also, Nikhil Pahwa, who led the fight in India brilliantly, said that he didn't really have a problem with Facebook per se.
Yeah.
It was the telcos he was fearing, but Facebook didn't know who they didn't understand well enough the principles involved.
Yes.
And they ended up being associated with the telcos, what the telcos were trying to do, and nobody wants to do that if you're
a good
guy.
And that was the other thing. They picked one telecom. I mean, because in every country, Facebook cuts a deal with one telecom company.
Yeah.
So they picked one mobile provider out of six. There are six major. I mean, India is a highly competitive mobile environment, and it's a great market to be in right now, except that everyone has to keep their prices low. It's a great example of how capitalism can work.
Yeah.
But because Facebook had to, which is their only way, sign up with one carrier. That gave that carrier access to this huge potential market. And the rest of the carriers, just like with that job search app situation, were instantly fighting it and yep. fighting for network neutrality. So you had like five telcos arguing for network neutrality and one against. And it just, you know, it was just, it was so terribly played out.
Torpedoed it, yeah.
Leo.
I know Portugal won. Don't tell me anything. I'm going to watch it later.
I was going to ask you, do you know who my barber is?
You know why Owen wants me to do these commercials? Because he knows we can't go home till all the commercials are done. All right, couple of final stories in a moment.
Pokemon Go. Great
panel. Owen, J.J. Stone, Jeff Jarvis from CUNY, from the University of Virginia, Siva Vaidyanathan, and, of course, my friend Jason Heiner from Tech Republic. Our show today brought to you, and one of the reasons I come to you clean-shaven, by Harry's Razors. Harry's is awesome. Harry's, I want to sing their praises. There's so many reasons it's a great idea. They decided that the best way to get the price of razor blades down, and as you know, most companies, they give away the razor. Well, actually, they don't even do that anymore. They charge you a lot for the razor and then double down on the blades.
Yeah.
Harry's decided we could do a better job. They bought the factory in Germany that makes the blades. They ship them direct to you, so they're half the price of the drugstore blades. They're every bit as good, high quality, high performance German blades. They're made by shaving experts. They feel really good. That flex hinge just, you know, contours to your face. They've got an aloe lubricating strip, so you get this nice smooth finish. It is a great shave. And it costs you so much less. And by the way, the Harry's Kit is a great way to get started. They have an iOS app. If you want to download that, it'll take you less than 30 seconds to place an order. Or go to the website, Harry's, HARRYS.com/twit. Take a look at the Winston set. That's the one I use, the nice metal handles. Or the Truman set. They're great. They're a real soft grip handle. The kit, for $15, you get the handle, three blades, you get a blade cover, and you get a full size, not a sample size, a full size of their foaming gel or their shave cream. The gel is like one of those aerosols. It's like Edge, you know, shave gel. The shave cream is what I really like. It has all these emollients in there, and it just comes in a tube, and you rub it on, and you get a smooth, beautiful shave. It smells great. They've kind of branched out a little bit. Now they're doing a daily face lotion with SPF 15 for hydration and protection. It's very nice. It's not greasy. It's lightweight. Feels good. Gentlemen, I invite you to harrys.com/twit. Ladies, too, for yourself or your loved one, and you get it shipped right to your door. And I'm going to give you $5 off your first purchase. Just go to harrys.com/twit, harrys.com/twit, or use the iOS app, and four taps, 30 seconds, and you're in. You're getting your Harry's. harrys.com/twit. And when I shaved you, Jeff Jarvis, on New Year's, about,
what did we use? We used Harry's.
We used Harry's.
Harry's did a good job. You did a bad job.
I am no barber.
I then went and read and finished it.
Yes,
off
I
with
thought
Harry's.
You would. Yes.
and then it grew back. But I still have to do my neck because I don't like neck beards.
No, one must still shave even when one has a beard. People forget that.
Yes. I'm kind of head to toe hair.
I don't want to know. This I do not want to know.
You got to disconnect.
This I do not want to know.
Church and state. Church and state. Keep separate.
Last little bit before we head for home. I think this is so cool. Posted on GitHub, the original assembly language source code for the Apollo 11's guidance computer that landed Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin on the moon. You can read the code. Thanks to iBiblio.org for getting the code. They scanned it in.
How did he get it?
They scanned it in. NASA's published it. So they scanned it in, and they did a lot of proofreading, as you might imagine, on old hard copy. It's hard to get the perfect scan, so they made sure it's all. Now, you'd have to have this particular kind of weird
compiler or something?
Computer that they were running. Yeah, I don't even...
What's it written in?
This is assembly language.
Assembly.
Oh, yeah. Why you'd need to have this particular computer.
All good code.
It's not exactly portable. But, I mean, my God, you know, you see alarm light on. You know, I mean, this is good stuff.
This is the geekiest thing I've seen all week by far. Amazing.
Isn't that awesome?
Amazing.
And to think that the phone you're carrying in your pocket has like 1,000 times more power than the computer that landed humans on the moon for the first time.
But did they really land on the moon?
No, of course not. We all know this is...
What are you doing with it? Are you going to... Are you solving world problems? No, you're going to get Pokemons.
Well, what do you want me to do? You want me to recompile the code and build my own... wait a minute.
You were Elon Musk,
Make
land
on the moon.
Make yourself useful, Uncle Leo.
Do something.
Make yourself useful.
It takes 3,000 amount of computing power to run Pokemon Go than it
does
to run the Apollo.
If
11.
They had Pokemon Go, they wouldn't have gone to the moon. They wouldn't have needed to.
They wouldn't
have
had time.
Put Pokemon on the moon and went and got them all.
Gotta get them all. Oh, can I imagine the augmented reality?
Yeah, if you could leave one on the moon. If you could
here's
leave.
The original printed source code.
That'd be crazy.
Look at that.
Wow.
And now, thanks.
And every geek has a crush on her.
Right?
She's probably
actually, I don't know if this is her, but a woman wrote much of that code.
Yeah, that's her. That's
is
her.
It her.
I forget her name. I'm,
she's still alive. She's in her 70s now.
Margaret Hamilton.
Margaret Hamilton. You know why I remember that name? Because she was the witch in The Wizard of Oz.
That was the name.
Not the
of
same
that,
Margaret
that
Hamilton?
Actress?
No. Okay. Yeah. How'd you know that, Carson? I'm impressed. Yeah, it's Margaret Hamilton. Oh, I know how. You're trying to get her for triangulation, aren't you?
I have a crush on her, too.
Well, that would be great. That would be
I would love to talk to her. And I think we should celebrate her because
absolutely.
Here she is in 1968.
She's
writing some of the most important computer code ever written.
Queen of code.
Yeah.
By the way, did you see Alexis Ohanian's Facebook post around his girlfriend's victory at Wimbledon?
I did not. Is he Serena Williams' girlfriend?
Boyfriend, yes.
What?
Yes. Oh,
Alexis Ohanian is dating Serena Williams?
Yes.
What?
Yes.
He's one of us. How did that happen?
One has arrived.
She could crush him like a walnut. I know Alexis. He's not a strong man.
I'll tell you what's really special about him and why this is why he's worthy. He is a graduate of the University of Virginia.
That's right. And he wrote Reddit at first with Steve Hoffman in Lisp. And that, for me, is true geek street cred.
So he wrote...
I think Jeff's trolling us. I can't...
That's
I don't
not
think
what
that's
no, 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 it's true, Serena. It's true.
He wrote, our queen stopped by center court today. So proud of you. 22 looks good on you.
Oh, wow.
That's her 22nd Grand Slam victory. Nobody thought she'd do it. They thought she's too old. What the
she's gonna
what?
Get, she's going to get 23. It might sneak around and get 25.
Here's Alexis Ohanian.
Wow.
Yeah.
Does he mean the Queen of England or Serena Williams?
He means Serena Williams.
Okay.
Wow.
I doubt he's dating the Queen of England.
That's
I'm not
cool.
going to push him that far.
Wow. So there's
that was like
us.
A New York Post story. So I went up to look and make sure it was still on. And the New York Post was like, five things you need to know about Serena Williams' boyfriend. He wrote Reddit. He started Reddit.
In Lisp.
Wow. How cool.
That's
it
good.
Is very cool.
That is really cool. Now, it's a long distance relationship.
We should all take a moment and realize how fortunate we are to live on Earth at the same time as Serena Williams. She is amazing. Just an amazing human being.
I love it.
Who is, I mean,
You're a sports fanatic. I know, Siva. So he's not trolling us. This is sincere.
She has my favorite video of the last couple months. It was one that she did on, you know, dumb things that people say about girls.
The guy
who wore all the, you know, the padding, and she's just taking serves and just pounding it, you know. Fabulous.
Awesome.
It was so impressive to see her because, I mean, she's gone through a lot of press hell and all this stuff, but she's in Wimbledon, it was just really striking how gracious and smart and mature and her presence and her charm. It was you're absolutely right, Steve. I mean, and she just hit this high note in her career and came out on the top, and you feel so good for her.
And to know, I know you've been watching tennis, you know, for decades too. Like, to know the kind of disrespect that she and her sister faced early in their careers.
Oh, yeah.
The extent to which they were dismissed by the commentators in almost every major tournament, and not to mention, you know, harassed by fans and insulted by fans all over the place. And then to see that, you know, it always sort of makes me chuckle the extent to which they embrace her now. You know, especially people
they,
like McEnroe.
They still rip her a lot about stuff. You know, she goes on the cover and they're, you know, putting them questions, is she too manly and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I'm like, what are you talking about?
I saw somebody say, she's got to be on steroids.
Here's a woman with no scandals, nothing going on in her personal life. She's not out here doing anything crazy. She's just a beast in her profession. And they still try to rip her down at social angles. Right. And it's just disgusting. She's a champion. She's great. Awesome.
It's kind of like LeBron James. It's kind of like LeBron James, you know. It's like LeBron James. You know, it's like they're so good, they're so overmatched, they're almost so squeaky clean in some ways too.
You don't have anything else to talk about.
Stuff. There's no easy angles, so they find all kinds of just ridiculous things to try to tear them down. But you know, people do that when you're on top. People do just say horrible, horrible things.
Oh, don't I know it?
That's also why they want to stay on top, man. That's why they want to stay on top. They know they can rise above in every possible way, that they're better than their critics.
Yeah.
And they do it. I'm very fortunate. I've seen Venus and Serena play, or at least Serena play, at Wimbledon, the U.S. Open, and the Australian Open. And I just have to finish the Siva Slam at the French Open, if I could manage that. So maybe next year.
The Siva Slam.
Nice.
That's Siva Vaidyanathan. He's a Robertson Professor of Media Studies at the University of Virginia. Great to have. What a good day to have you make your 5-year return. We won't keep it. We won't make it 5 years till you come back. I'd love to have you back soon. Yeah, let's get him on Twig. What do you say, Jeff? I think so. Thank you, Siva.
We don't argue about Google anymore, but we can find something else.
That's Jeff Jarvis.
Siva better than anybody else.
Oh yeah. In fact, you introduced us, so I thank you, Jeff Jarvis, Professor of Journalism at CUNY. His erstwhile rival, crosstown rival, blogs at buzzmachine.com, joins us every Wednesday for This Week in Google. We'll see you Wednesday.
Yes, you will.
Look forward to it.
And I'll be on good connectivity.
Yay. You look great. Man, this camera's never looked that good. That's beautiful. I don't know what you're doing there.
I keep on changing color, though. Yeah. I'm a chameleon.
That's just you.
I'm a video chameleon.
Jason Heiner, he writes for Tech Republic. He's the global editor-in-chief there at CBS Interactive and the author of an excellent book I particularly enjoyed, Chapter 9, Follow the Geeks. You could find it on Amazon. Yes, you could find it on Audible.
On Audible, yep.
Or go to followthegeeksbook.com. Thank you, Jason, for being here.
Pleasure.
Yeah.
Pleasure.
And thanks for the book,
too. Glad to be in studio.
I don't know if I thank you enough. You also sent me a nice shopping bag. Really enjoyed
that. Follow the Geeks bag.
Yes, I appreciate
that. You got it.
I did get it. Thank you. Doctor, you're my favorite guy. You move out of the township, you move to Petaluma, we'll take good care of you here, all right?
Man, I need to move to the state that you own so I can take care of things. Here, Lena and Leah, say hi.
Happy birthday, Lena. Happy birthday.
He's yelling happy birthday.
Happy birthday. Your card's in the mail.
With the stamp on it.
Happy birthday, dear. You happy to be 9?
Yeah.
Last day as an 8-year-old. You know what that means.
No, I don't.
No, neither do I.
Leah, how long is the birthday festival going on?
Leah, do we call the cops?
No.
Okay.
What do we call them?
We don't call them. We have a system in place where, depending on what's going on, she calls her mother or she calls my mother.
Wait a minute. You've trained her not to call the police?
When she's with me, yes. And that's what my last name is going to be. I hope to live in a world where I don't have to teach my daughter to do things like that.
That's going
to
make me cry.
Wow.
I want to live in a world where it's okay when she's with her mother to call the police, but I fear when she's with me. I've been pulled over 30 times in the last 2 years, and I'm a very quote-unquote friendly, speakable guy. But in the last 4 years, I've had 3 of those cops pull guns on me where I had to de-escalate the situation because they were just out of control. And I fear that if something happened to me and she called the cops and she had fear in her voice, they might show up, see her. I'm out all the time, and people think that I've kidnapped a little white child. So I wouldn't want a cop to show up and her be upset and think that I'm the aggressor and something go wrong. So depending on the situation, she calls her mother. Or she calls my mother, and then they get to make the decision on whether the police are called or not. And I don't like living in that world. I don't like living in that reality. I just want everybody to be somewhat more responsible and respectable of other people's feelings. I want black people to live. I want police to live. I mean, I can't say blue lives matter more than black lives, but all lives matter. But right now, it's a very dangerous time, and I just want people to realize that it's also a great time. I'm sitting here with Uncle Leo. You know, he done sold my inheritance, and I plan on taking over him in the near future when he retires, and things will be positive. My daughter is beautiful, and she is healthy, and she is driving me crazy. And those are all good things for me to be happy about. So even though I'm upset, You still gotta be happy. I just want the world to be a little bit different sometime soon.
Amen,
yes,
sir.
Yes, man.
Truer words ever said.
Yes,
thank
sir.
You, Owen. And thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time. Another twit
this is in the can.
Wow.